Coming up today on KBOO, it's News and Public Affairs Day, all day Friday the 13th. 7:30 a.m., it's Positively Revolting Talk Radio. Ani and Melody speak with feminist icon, activist, and author Robin Morgan. Her new book is Fighting Words, a Toolkit for Combating the Religious Right.
At 9, Marlena Smith hosts her electronic salon. She'll speak with Shelley Lewis, author of Naked Republicans, a full frontal exposure of right-wing hypocrisy and greed. She'll also interview Michael Mead, author, mythologist, and storyteller. He's got a new book out called Water of Life, Initiation and the Tempering of the Soul. And he's speaking at the Old Church tonight at 7 p.m. At 11, of course, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman.
At 12:30, we'll hear a recent talk given in Portland by anti-nuclear activist Dr. Helen Caldicott, author of Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. At 2, we'll hear from anti-war activist Cindy Sheehan, whose new book is Not One More Mother's Child. She spoke recently in Portland.
At around 3, the guest is author, lecturer, and engaged citizen David Corton. His recent talk is titled The Great Turning from Empire to Earth Community. And around 4:15, we'll hear from humorist and journalist Calvin Trillin. His latest book is Heck of a Job. And of course at 5, it's the KBOO Evening News.
At 6 on Bread and Roses, The Collective hosts a special on Superwoman. And finally, from 7 to 9, hear a pre-election special from Pacifica and talk by journalist Jason Leopold. He broke the number 2 story in the list of unreported stories in Censored 2007. That's the story charging Halliburton with selling nuclear technologies to Iran.
Please help us out. Come on down and become a part of the KBOO AM news team. We do need volunteers to learn how to edit, engineer, or anchor the news. Contact Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202, or email her at amnews@kboo.org. Your participation is what makes us who we are. You've been listening to KBOO, your non-corporate listener-supported radio station. We hit the airwaves at 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM Corvallis on translator K264AA, 91.9 FM in Hood River on K220HR. Thanks for listening. Thanks for becoming a member. And have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend.
Tune in all day this Friday, October 13th, for KBOO's News and Public Affairs Day. Special programming begins at 7 a.m. with the KBOO Morning News and continues all day until 9. You'll want to stay tuned for our special features with radical feminist activist Robin Morgan, mythologist and storyteller Michael Mead, humorist and journalist Calvin Trillin, and leading anti-nuclear activist Dr. Helen Caldicott. That's this Friday from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. right here on KBOO Portland.
KBOO would like to thank our members for voting in our annual election. The KBOO Board of Directors is pleased to welcome Mark Anderson, Sean Biggers, Rebecca Chow, Nancy Cornwell, Judy Feistel, Tom Hood, and Yvonne Rivero as new board members. 2 ballot measures were approved and 1 failed. The bylaw change revision to the duties of the Personnel Committee passed with a 70% majority. The bylaw change to allow for removal of board members by the Board of Directors passed with a 72% majority. The bylaw amendment creating term limits for Board of Directors failed to meet the 2/3 majority requirement with 65% voting in favor. Thank you to our entire community for getting involved. You make KBOO the grassroots, democratic voice of the people for the Pacific Northwest.
Attention nonprofit job seekers, Portland's largest networking forum, Idealist.org's Nonprofit Career Fair, will be held at Portland State University on October 19th. This is an opportunity to connect directly with representatives from as many as 60 to 70 organizations in one space about current and future employment, internship, and volunteer opportunities. Additionally, free information sessions offering nonprofit career advice will be available to all job seekers. The fair will be held in the ballroom on the 3rd floor of the Smith Memorial Student Union at Portland State University on October 19th from 11 to 3 p.m. For more information, go to idealist.org/fairs. KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of this event.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com. Stay tuned for Positively Revolting Talk Radio. The time is 7:33 on KBOO.
Thank you. Well, good morning. That was one of my favorite songs from Loretta McKennitt, Tango to Avora, a beautiful piece of music that so I hope we can set the tone for this beautiful Friday morning. It's going to be a lovely day out there here in Cascadia, everybody, and this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm your lovely and charming hostess, Melody Silverwolf, and my lovely and charming co-hostess, Ani Haynes, will be with us in just a moment. And today we're going to have a really amazing guest, one of my personal icons, someone who has had a huge influence on my thinking and the thinking of many millions of American women and women around the world. And that would be Robin Morgan, who, as many of you probably know, is considered to be one of the primary movers and shakers behind the current wave of feminism in this country. Her 1970 book, Sisterhood is Powerful, really set the tone for an entire generation of American women to wake up and to seek their liberation from the constraints of the society that they had been born and raised in, and to transform it into something more egalitarian where women had something more like equal rights. And, of course, that struggle is still going on, and along with the struggles of a lot of other people on this planet who are seeking to live their birthright as free human beings. And that's what this place is all about, KBOO Community Radio. And that's why we're all here, because we're all seeking to create that for ourselves and for our friends, our community, and for everybody here on this world that we share. So today we're going to be having Robin Morgan join us, and she has written a new book called Fighting Words, a toolkit for combating the religious right. And very cleverly, in a martial arts sort of way, has realized that the way to respond to people who lie and obfuscate and bluster is to speak truth to them and to use sometimes their own words against them. Truth is an amazing, powerful tool. And so we're going to be talking with her in just a few minutes. But I do want to talk to you a little bit right now about the fact that KBOO Community Radio is listener-sponsored, and this, of course, is a membership drive right now. And we're seeking to raise $175,000, as we do twice a year, to keep this station open, keep the lights on and the transmitter running, and keep these programming gems coming at you 24/7, 365. We're here for you. We do programs on every holiday. We're here in the middle of the night. When it's snowing outside, when it's sleeting, you know, we're here and for you. And that's what we do, and that's why we need your support. So we have a big goal today here on Positively Revolting, and just for the day in general. So those of you who haven't already contributed and aren't already members, I'd like to give you the magic number that will change your future. And here it is, 503-232-8818. That's the magic number. And if you dial that number, your life will be transformed in ways you could only imagine, because you will become a member and a co-owner of KBOO Community Radio. And so simple to do. All you have to do is pick up your phone, take your finger or other, like a pencil, another object to press the buttons with, and simply press these buttons, 503-232-8818. And if you do that now, then you won't have to worry about it later. We'll be taking some membership breaks throughout the show, but just wanted to give you a heads up that, we expect your support. We do this. Most of us down here are volunteers. We do this for the love of it. That's the real meaning of the word amateur, one who loves, one who does things for the love of them. And that's what we're all about here. We do this because we believe in what we're doing. We believe in KBOO. We believe in our words. And we believe in our community. And we know, we trust that you will show your support, as you always have, and become members and keep this station on the air and happily running along, fighting the good fight. And here's Ani.
Why, yes. Speaking of fighting the good fight.
She's wearing her breastplate of righteousness today. No.
Yeah, the golden lasso of truth will be talked about later on today.
I thought you left that in the car.
Yeah, well, later on. So, just to let you know, actually, what's coming up on KBOO, your very own community radio station.
She sees into the future.
We have, at 9 o'clock, Marlena Smith hosting her electronic salon. She'll be speaking with Shelley Lewis, author of Naked Republicans, Full Frontal Exposure of Right-Wing Hypocrisy and Greed.
Ooh, sounds racy.
Tell me about
Especially
it.
Especially for 9 a.m.
She'll also interview Michael Mead, the author, mythologist, and storyteller. Every time we play a Michael Mead piece, I know the phones light up in the lobby for the next hour, people asking, who is this man? He's pretty amazing. I have to say, he has a new book out called Water of Life, Initiation and the Tempering of the Soul. At 11, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. At 12:30, Dr. Helen Caldicott. We will hear a recent talk given in Portland. She's the author of so many books, including Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. At 2, we'll hear from an anti-war activist, Cindy Sheehan. Might have heard of her.
Oh, yeah, I think I have heard of her.
Her new book is Not One More Mother's Child. She recently spoke in Portland, like, on the 2nd of October. So, I mean, this is fresh stuff here. At 3 o'clock, the guest is author, lecturer, and engaged citizen, David Corton. His recent talk is titled The Great Turning, From Empire to Earth Community. And at around 4:15, we're going to hear from humorist and journalist Calvin Trillin. His latest book is Heck of a Job. Of course, we have the evening news and Bread and Roses. And Bread and Roses is actually focusing on Superwoman tonight. That's the golden lesson.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yep. Carol Shows.
So are they
Shows
all going to dress up like Superwoman? And
I don't know.
I'd pay money to see that.
You could come down and, well, if you paid your pledge in person. Okay. At 7 p.m., excerpts from Pacifica News Network's 2006 election special series called Informed Dissent, including a look at how the Iraq War and Hurricane Katrina will affect the balance of Congress this November. The series includes contributions by KABU reporters and KABU programmers getting their word out nationally, which I find really exciting.
Well, at people do listen to us everywhere.
Indeed. At 8 o'clock, award-winning investigative reporter Jason Leopold talks about what goes on behind the scenes in a world of political news reporting. His latest book is called News Junkie. Leopold covered the fallout from CIA agent Valerie Plame's outing of the Bush by the Bush administration for truthout.org. And his reporting on Halliburton's scale of nuclear technology to Iran was named the second most censored story of 2007 by Project Censored.
Wait, it's not 2007 yet.
In Project Censored's 2007 edition.
There we go.
Okay, good. Then. So that's what's coming up on KABU this very day, our very exciting news and public affairs day. I always look forward to this day every 6 months.
On Friday the 13th, the day that is sacred to the great goddess. What more can you ask? It's a perfect day to have Robin Morgan on. I think she's a goddess to many people.
Indeed. I've really enjoyed Robin's writing for quite some time. I do want to make two quick announcements, though, about things that are really important and happening around us right now. There is at the Oregon Convention Center throughout this month, there is an exhibition. It's an art exhibit portrayed, and it's art and history exhibit. It's history brought to you, something we need to be aware of. The exhibit is Psychiatry, an Industry of Death. It's a touring exhibit and documentary. There's free admission on Sunday. It ends this Sunday. So it's been going on, actually, for the last couple weeks and ends this Sunday. It is free admission, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. every day. So you might, you know, want to stop by and check it out over the course of this weekend.
The history of psychiatry is not necessarily a very pleasant one.
No, it's actually pretty dismal. So Oregon Convention Center, 777 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. It's presented as a public service by the Citizens Commission on Human Rights Oregon. They are especially looking at forced electro shock therapy.
Mm-hmm. And I know someone who underwent that.
I do too, actually. So Psychiatry, an Industry of Death. There's an extremely powerful poster. I wish I could hold it up to the microphone and have you all see it.
Unfortunately, there's no visuals on radio.
There
but
isn't.
Someday, maybe, you never know.
Connect with me now. See what's in my head. Okay. The other event I really just need to get out there is Si Se Puede Chicana Resistance and Empowerment. This is a workshop on the history and current experiences of Chicanas working for social change, featuring Professor Luz Maria Gordillo, Department of History at Washington State University in Vancouver, the campus and community activists Angie Mejia and Yasmin Rodriguez. 7 to 9 p.m. on Thursday, October 26th. That's in other words, Women's Books and Resources on 8 Killingsworth, which is pretty much at Williams, so I'm not sure which side of Williams 8 Killingsworth is. I think it's on northeast, right? It's on the northeast side of Williams. Williams being
that would be the
dividing
south
line.
South side of Killingsworth, right? Yeah.
Well, that's north. No. 8 Northeast Killingsworth is the address. It was just the first place I was looking at it. The northeast, indicator was left off.
I see. Okay.
And I was trying to figure out, since it says it's at Williams and Williams is the dividing line.
Surely you could figure people.
You'd have to wander maybe up to 4 blocks to figure this one out. But in fact, it's 8 Northeast Killingsworth. So that is, again, October 26th, 7 to 9 p.m. Se Se Puede, Chicana Resistance and Empowerment. All right. So.
Now.
Turning our attention to the tempe of this program. Good morning. I believe we have Robin Morgan with us now on the phone.
Hi there.
Welcome
good
to
morning.
KBOO.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always a delight.
I'm so glad to have you here on Positively Revolting Talk Radio.
Well, you've got one of the most beautiful cities in the world, Portland. And it's an honor because it's also the home of one of the greatest living writers in the English language, Ursula K. Le Guin.
Absolutely.
Indeed.
Frequently seen in Powell's, running through the stacks, perusing the books.
My advantage of being a hometown girl is she actually spoke at my high school and my college classes quite frequently.
Oh, wow. Well, I envy you. She is a friend, but more than being her friend, I am her rabid, unashamed fan.
Yes, she's amazing. Well, anyway, I'm so pleased to have you with us this morning. I have long been a fan of your work as well.
Yes, thank as you. Have I.
And in fact, for our listeners, let me just go ahead and throw it out there. Robin Morgan has published more than 20 books, including the now classic anthologies Sisterhood is Powerful, Sisterhood is Global, and also Sisterhood is Forever, the women's anthology for a new millennium. She is an icon of feminist thinking, and I'm just thrilled that you could be here with us today. I also wanted to point out your book, The Demon Lover, which came out first mm-hmm. in the 80s, uh-huh. Late 80s, and then was re-released just in 2001. The Demon Lover, The Roots of Terrorism, which I think has a whole lot to offer still to today.
Thank you. Yes, I'm sad that it's unfortunately, tragically, still as relevant as it is.
Yes, that's very unfortunate. But, you know, your new book, Fighting Words, A Toolkit for Combating the Religious Right, I think is wonderful because it embodies that classic feminist creed that you should speak truth to power. And speaking people's truth is, you know, something that we don't do enough in this country. And I really love some of the
thank you.
Well, words that you've included.
It came about in a strange way, Fighting Words, because, first of all, I think I haven't quoted this many men since I was, like, maybe 15 or something.
Right.
But they're good quotes. I just got really tired and cranky about talking back to my television set the way we all do and muttering to myself and about not just the rise of the religious right in this country, but the intense, cynical, manipulative use of people of faith who are scared at all the changes going on in the world and who, you know, retreat and then get used and exploited by really cynical politicians. Mostly what drove me bananas was the way that they kept equating religiosity, and in particular Christian fundamentalism, with the founding of the country.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And to criticize them in the slightest was to be seen, of course, as unpatriotic. In the last 4 or 5 years, a number of really first-rate biographies have come out about the framers. I refuse to call them the fathers, okay?
Right.
But the framers of the Constitution are the founders of the country. And they're wonderful, but they're like 600-700 pages long, and most people don't get to them or get through them. And so I thought, okay, well, the reality is we live in an age of, sound bites and factoids. So what if I took, not out of context, but on the contrary, very much in context, their own words, the framers, and cited and sourced them. But in short, soundbite accessible terms, and also facts that people don't know, so that the complete lies that the religious right tells go unchallenged. You know, I mean, everybody has a right to their own opinions, but not to their own facts.
Right.
And the founders were, look, they were certainly imperfect, decidedly. I mean, some of them were slaveholders. Others, like Franklin, actually founded the first anti-slave societies in the country. And on women, not so good. I mean, we were not even on their radar, which is not to say that they had radar in the 18th century, but had they, we wouldn't have been a blip. But on this subject, separation of church and state, they were radicals. They were not just fusty old men in powdered wigs and knee breeches. And I wanted to refresh them and restore them to us as the real revolutionaries they were. They, after all, they were fleeing religious persecution, and they were fleeing and fighting a situation where George III was not only the head of state, but the head of the church. So this was the very first time in the world that the concept of separating church and state was put into action. Actually, Jefferson put it in first in the Act of Religious Freedom in Virginia, and that was the model for the government.
Rather
and
ironic, isn't it?
I mean, their quotes are amazing.
Yes. And I mean, I think, well, again, I haven't spent a whole lot of my time reading the words of the framers, focusing more on, I have to say, women of history and the underdogs of history, you know, history from below. And yet, you know, I just found this so eye-opening.
They have a lot of
and
good things to say.
While I have a stepdaughter who is 18, and she and her friends have, you know, started to attend university and that sort of thing, and there's been some incredible go-betweens in their classrooms around the founding of the country and you know, well, we live in a Judeo-Christian society.
And not true.
So not true. And when I got to this quote from Washington, George Washington, you have a section from the Treaty of Tripoli. Wherein he states flat out, Washington initiated such documents as the Treaty of Tripoli, which states, the government of the United States of America is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion.
Yeah, there it is. I mean,
yes.
Washington
kind of plain.
Wrote the treaty, and Adams, who succeeded him, signed it into law.
Yes, and I mean, they make it really clear that that there was an intent for religion to stay out of the public sphere, to remain a private matter for people, and for the government especially to never connect itself with any branch of religion. I think
absolutely.
It's crystal clear.
I mean, we tend to think of the First Amendment as the freedom of speech amendment, which of course it is, but the very first, what even precedes freedom of speech, is the very first words are that the government cannot establish religion. The first words of the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights. But we don't, you know, we sort of lack the tools to argue. And I was hoping that this, that's why I called it, subtitled it a toolkit,
right,
would give us some of those. Most Americans don't know that the Constitution contains not one reference to a deity on purpose. We don't know that Jefferson's original draft of the Declaration of Independence did not mention endowed by the Creator. He was pressured to put it in. We don't know that the framers, you know, were a hodgepodge of, they were free thinkers, they were deists in some cases, with deism being a belief in some unnamed, unknowable powers evincing themselves through science and nature, which is sort of like what today we would call the search for a unified field theory.
Yes.
They were agnostic. Some were Christians, like Madison was a devout Christian, but he was very strong on separation. He felt there shouldn't be chaplains in Congress. Washington felt that there should not be chaplains in the military because they were divisive. Some of them were atheists, like Jefferson, and many were Freemasons. I mean, Jefferson said, question with boldness even the existence of God. Madison said, religious bondage shackles and debilitates the mind. Franklin said, I doubt of revelation. Paine, well, Tom Paine, we expect the best from Tom Paine.
Yes, we do.
Said, my own mind is my church. But we don't know. For example, when the far right says, well, under God and in God we trust, you know, we're there from the very beginning. This is not true. This is a complete lie. Neither was the case. until the 1950s, when In God We Trust became the national motto, replacing E Pluribus Union, Unum, which is out of many one, which was the founder's motto.
Right.
And also at the same time, Under God was, our currency got gotted up with Under God, and Under God was put into the Pledge of Allegiance. When in the 1950s? Mm-hmm. During McCarthyism. When the country had to be rallied to fight so-called godless communism. We don't know that when Bush adds "So help me God" to his presidential oath of office, he's actually in violation of the Constitution, which gives the actual wording of the oath, and it does not have "So help me God" in it.
Well, it's
and
certainly fact, not the first time says, he's been in violation.
Yeah, in fact, it even says you can affirm, which was incredibly radical for the 18th century. You don't have to swear. We don't even know that the religious rights position, the Protestant evangelical religious rights position on abortion, is based on the Roman Catholic Church's position on abortion. Evangelicals would be, some of them, unhappy to hear that, but that is the truth, because there is absolutely nothing in the Bible or the Constitution against abortion. At the time of the Constitution, abortion was legal.
And you make the point that, in fact, in the Constitution, women are not mentioned at all.
That's right.
They were not on the radar.
Yeah.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to take a quick break in our discussion here. As fascinating as it, I loathe to break it, but we have pressing business to attend to here.
It's time to raise money for our community radio station, Robin, and we have a couple of other folks with us to help us do just that. We have Edison and Grace this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are things going?
Well, things are going well. But first of all, we're going to give some numbers. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. And make that call right now. This is a great time to take a break, make the call, pledge to this incredible radio station, and get a copy of Fighting Words by Robin Morgan.
That's right. For a $60 pledge.
For a $60 pledge.
You can get a copy of this book, which is, it's a great title, you know.
And it's a very accessible book.
It is.
Very easy read. Very, very enjoyable.
That's right. And part of the problem I think we're having so far with getting some people to call is that this is such a fascinating interview. Robin is just so forthcoming and so easy to understand. She makes total sense. And so we understand why you haven't called yet, but you can do it now. One person did call. Lisa Renewed from Oregon City. Thank you, Lisa. And we need other people to call. 503-232-8818. I'll say that one again. 503-232-8818. And if you're outside the Portland calling area, 1-877-500-5266.
We have faith in you that you will call, and we know that you will.
Well, better way. Think about it. In a couple of weeks, will be Thanksgiving, and you're going to go to your uncle's house, and the fundamentalist Christian cousin will be there.
Oh.
Right? And they'll be talking about how we live in a Christian nation and blah, blah, blah. Don't you want some ammunition to come back at them and to just use their words as fodder against them? Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Everybody needs ammunition for Cousin Waldo or Aunt Harriet or whoever it is in
your
family.
That's right. So for a mere $60, that's $5 a month if you go the electronic transfer route.
Well, let's actually break it down a little bit more, Grace, because here's what I want everyone that's listening today to understand is that we have a goal, a pretty ambitious goal for this program. $1,500 is the goal. You can help us reach that goal. Well, you could just give us $1,500. We'd be done with it. But I think what we're really going to do is we want to share this with everyone. And you can get the book that Robin has written. You can do the $60 pledge level. And I want to tell you, I want to put it in perspective for you.
How would I do that, Edison?
You can call 503-232-8818, and that will cost you 16 cents a day.
What was that number again, Edison?
503-232-8818.
But what if I live far away? Could I call 1-877-500-KBOO?
You can do that for free. And if you're online, you can go at kboo.fm. And you can just click a button, and we can walk you through that. But we have lots of ways that we'd like to thank you for becoming a member of KBOO. You can ask the person that answers the phone what is available. But I would encourage you, we don't have a lot of these books, but I would encourage you to go ahead and get Fighting Words, a toolkit for combating adding the religious rite.
And I have a news flash here. Chris Andre, our intrepid morning news volunteer, is continuing her offer of $10 per call. So take advantage of this. This is a great way to support KBOO.
An extra 10 bucks a call? How can you go wrong? Call now. 503-232-8818.
Take the time to call now, because in just a few moments, we're going to go back to the interview, and it's just a great interview. I can understand why you wouldn't want to call right then. So we're going to hold it here just for a few more minutes so you can call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
We just need about 13 or 14 people, 13 people to call today with $120
13
pledge
on the 13.
Of $10 a month, and we'll hit our goal just fine. It's so easy to do, and you'll be glad you did. Every time you turn on the radio and hear KBOO afterwards, after you've joined, you will hear it from a different perspective. I know it sounds cliche, but it's
it's so true, because it's now you're part of it. It really does change and enhance the pleasure of being able to hear interviews with people like
Robin Morgan.
Exactly. I'm just looking at all these guests that we have.
I know. And I just have to a little personal story, because I met Robin Morgan when I was 18 years old.
Yes.
And back in 1970, and I was just like fresh off the farm. And, you know, and Robin came to my Little Women's Liberation Group in Portland, Maine. And I remember just sitting on this apartment floor and just sort of at Robin's knees. And I'll tell you what, and reading and just meeting you and reading your book was just the most wonderful experience. And
it was
very
cool.
I can't
think of anything more important than supporting a radio station like KBOO. I mean, seriously, it's not hyperbole, because information is power.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And we know that mainstream media, not even to speak of the seizure of radio by right-wing media, it doesn't give the truth. It doesn't give the whole truth. Doesn't, in some cases, give any of the truth.
It's certainly filtered.
So you're vitally important to the lifeblood of democracy.
Well, thank you very much. And we agree, because we are all here as volunteers. And we are here because we believe in KBOO. We believe in the power of the word.
Call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
The phones are ringing, and we want to hear them ring more. We've got a couple of lines open. So let's hear
fill
from
them
you
out,
now.
Babe.
That's right. Let's go back and listen to Robin.
Yes, and whatever you did to Grace, it certainly did work well. So hopefully all the rest of you listening will be transformed as well.
503-232-8818. We are here, in fact, because we believe in the power of, and we believe in the power and the need for communities to come together and provide education and tools for empowerment and enrichment of our lives. Thank you, Robin, for also being with us this morning and for providing such wonderful tools for the enrichment
of our
lives.
My real pleasure and honor. I mean, the work that you do every day is absolutely vital. I mean, in compiling Fighting Words, I was in a state of sort of continual indigestion and, and indignation, because I kept, why don't we know these things? Why don't we know that in the 15th century Roman Catholic Church considered abortion moral? Why don't we know that offices for faith-based initiatives inside the White House would have the framers spinning in their graves because of statements that they affirmed, like any statute or public policy must have a secular legislative purpose?
Right.
Jefferson, Jefferson was a hottie. Jefferson was amazing.
He
was amazing because Sally Hemings was telling him all these things. I don't know, but
right.
Definitely the most radical of the radicals. I mean, he researched the whole notion of, you know, this being a Christian country because our law was based on British common law, and British common law was based on the Ten Commandments, which people like Judge Roy Moore are still saying to this day.
Right.
And so I have quotes in here, all properly sourced, so you can, you know, brandish the book, sort of like quotations from Chairman Jefferson, in which he did his thorough, he was obviously very brilliant and a real scholar, and he did his thorough due diligence, and he wrote at great length, and I have excerpts from it just for space reasons, that could not be the case. U.S. law is indeed based on British common law. But British common law is based on Saxon law, and Saxon law predates the coming of Christianity to the British Isles by quite a few centuries. And there are only two of the so-called commandments. By the way, the actual Hebrew and Aramaic translates as the Ten Words, not the Ten Commandments. So that cleanses them of certain authority. The Decalogue is the proper way to refer to them. But there are only two that overlap with U.S. law or common law: thou shalt not kill, and not steal. And those two go back to the Code of Hammurabi, way before the Decalogue.
Or I suppose so, lying too, because perjury is wrong. But you know, that's sort of a gray area.
You know, but it's just, yeah, that's right. I mean, and in some parts of the country, you know, adultery is still a bit. But Jefferson was absolutely clear on this, and when they wrote back and forth to each other, sometimes the quotes were absolutely amazing. I mean, Hamilton accused Alexander Hamilton, who was a very staunch religionist, along with Patrick Henry, accused Jefferson and Adams of, quote, successfully trying to found an atheist republic on the ruins of Christianity, close quote. And Adams, who was sort of always the diplomat, kind of hemmed and hawed and said, well, I wouldn't put it quite that way. And Jefferson, in effect, said, duh.
Only in his 18th century style. Well, what I love about this book is that you have some quotes from some of the, shall we say, less remarkable presidents, like that noted radical Millard Fillmore and Taft and Garfield. I mean, not exactly people we think of as shining beacons of lefthood, and even they chime in with their quotes about, you know, religion and government were meant to be kept separate, and you know, and it's very very enlightening.
Well, I stuck in a section of, of additional presidents because I didn't, you know, I could hear the far right saying, well, yes, but the framers, it ended there. From that time on, we've been a Christian country. So it goes all the way up to the present, not just with presidents, but a section on the law and justices of the Supreme Court, and a section of ordinary great Americans, non-elected types. And, you know, the real reason, feminist to feminist, I can tell you, was that I was getting awfully tired of quoting the boys. But, of course, we haven't had any women presidents, and we haven't had many women justices. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to have a section where I can get Elizabeth Cady Stanton's great quotes in, along with Mark Twain, who said the God of the Old Testament is a malign thug. And straight on up, you know, through Alice Walker, and a whole section of quotes on spirituality versus religion, because they're two very different things. And then in the process, in doing the president, to backtrack for a minute, Lincoln was such an interesting case because he emerges as a real Paul, a real politician. When he was young, he wrote a manuscript arguing against divine authorship of or inspiration for the Bible. And a friend of his, Samuel Hill, warned him that its publication would have disastrous effects on his getting elected if he ever chose to run for office, so he burned it. But he was totally clear on separation of church and state, and interestingly, his first draft of the Emancipation Proclamation makes no mention of any deity. Pressured, he added the words, the gracious favor of God, and the words under God appear neither in his first or second drafts of the Gettysburg Address. That also was religious pressure. So the quotes, whether from presidents or justices or, as I say, just notable Americans, range from the profound to the funny. I mean, George Carlin, we have a wonderful quote from George Carlin in which he basically says, we really have to keep church and state separate, because each one by itself is capable of really screwing us up on their own, so both of them together is certain death.
That's for sure. and we're seeing the truth of that now.
Well, yeah, and then I stuck in a section, just literally for the hell of it, in other words, the opposition with quotes.
Yes, some of those are great.
Well, you know, I'm glad you think that, because friends said, why do that? We're surrounded by those quotes.
They're so outrageous.
Yeah.
One of my favorites from number 41, George Herbert Walker Bush. No, I don't know that atheists should be considered as citizens, nor should they be considered as patriots. This is one nation under God. I mean, Hello? He's saying that if you're an atheist, you're not even a citizen of the United States? That's pretty outrageous.
Like, what's disenfranchisement? It stiffens your spine, this section. And then there's Ma Ferguson, who was a governor of Texas.
And
outlawed the teaching of foreign languages in Texas in the 1920s while brandishing a Bible and saying, quote, if English was good enough for Jesus Christ, it's good enough for Texas. So it doesn't only make you psychotically depressed or alarmed, it also gives you a good laugh. And then in case you get, we hope, exercised enough to become even more activist than KBOO listeners assumedly already are, I put a section at the end of resources. So there's websites to visit,
excellent,
groups to join, books to read, articles to catch up on, about separation of church and state. And interestingly, some of the groups are religious groups because progressive people of faith understand that this separation is very important for their independence and autonomy as well as for that of the state.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to get back to that we mentioned very in passing earlier was the all of us in the propagation of In God We Trust.
Mm.
This is one of the parts of the book that I found absolutely surprising, and I was discussing it with my partner this morning, and I mean, we're both KBOO public affairs volunteers. We consider ourselves pretty well learned in many an area. And we were both totally stunned to find that it was only in 1957 that In God We Trust was added to paper currency.
I remember looking at it when I was a child and thinking, and I knew that it was meant otherwise, but I remember thinking, I see what this means. Basically, this is like In God We Trust. It says that on here because this is the God people worship. People worship money. How appropriate. I remember thinking that when I was like 7 years old.
Well, I think you had a finely honed sense of irony at age seven that most people do not have.
I think so. I already could see the truth.
But
you know,
the thing that struck me, I think, was the fact that here's this, I guess, the popularity, the push behind the phrase, coming out of a McCarthyist era and looking at now with our the last 20, 25 years of really hyper-increased religiosity and the Christian right having a major upswing again and again, us really kind of looking at the Christianizing of the nation and how these two things often go together in the repressive, repressive civil rights, repression of free speech, repression of dissent, and the increase in the far Christian right.
And, you know, speaking of free speech for a moment.
You're absolutely right. You're totally right. Because it affects everything. You know, in other words, women, of course, are always the canaries in the mine. So 15, 20 years ago, when the abortion clinics began to be bombed and providers shot to death, you know, the women's movement said to law enforcement, hello, we call this terrorism, real terrorism. And I remember lobbying legislators and being told, well, yes, but that's just women. And, of course, it's an incendiary issue. And you know the old statement, if they come for us at night and you do nothing, they will come for you in the morning. They've been 30 years building this religious, political, dominionism, as they call it, movement. And this is the third religious, religious revival we've had in the country. They always come at times of great change when people get really scared and many retreat to religion. One was, for example, right after the Civil War. That's why the original Pledge of Allegiance, which was written by a socialist minister at that time, a Baptist minister, never said under God, but it said one nation indivisible. Under God was inserted in the pledge, as we know, in the McCarthyite 50s. But religious revivals have been different from this one, and we can come back to them. We've come back from them before. This one is a stated political dominionist takeover.
Right.
And it does, you're so right in making those connections because, for example, more and more legislation, faith-based supposedly legislation has been passed that deregulates any businesses that are religious connected or owned, which would have the framers apoplectic. So that religious businesses are now increasing, whether it's daycare centers or funeral parlors or booksellers or broadcasting from car washes to grocery stores. It doesn't matter. Each of those businesses, as long as they can claim a religious affiliation, are not subject to taxes in most states, and in all states do not have to answer to regulations about hiring, firing. They can discriminate against the disabled, against women, against people of color, against same-sex lovers. It doesn't matter because they have a religious exemption. Now, this is shocking. This totally undoes decades of civil rights, decades of changing consciousness about hiring and firing and employment regulations and discrimination. So it affects every aspect of our lives, this politicized religious revival. Certainly it affects science, whether it's stem cell research or a woman's right over her own body. We have now dropped. We used to lead the world in scientific research. Right. We're now near the bottom of the pile. This year, for the first time in 36 years, the government has cut money for the National Institutes for Health. It affects our foreign policy because we put ourselves in a position where we are the Christian Crusades. There's nothing it doesn't affect, and each of those effects is disastrous.
Absolutely. And I want to give our listeners a chance to interact with you, actually. 503-231-8187 is the number to call in our air room, so you too can interact this morning, ask questions or comments with Robin Morgan. Her newest book, Fighting Words, A Toolkit for Combating the Religious Right. And I believe we have a caller now. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air.
Oh, I think we're going to try that again. And good morning. You're on the air.
Yes. You know, first of all, I noticed that there's always an attempt of people with finite minds to reduce religion down to human activities. And religion, there's a lot of false prophets out here in the world, and I don't know why people try to reduce religion down to what people do, because religion is beyond people in terms of what it's all about. And then I also noticed one host, when she was asking for contributions, I don't know if you picked up on this, but she says, I have faith that people will make pledges. Now, faith is a religious thing.
No, it's a spiritual thing. No.
Well, religious, spiritual, I mean...
They're different. Religion and spirituality
faith
aren't the same.
It's something that comes... It's something that...
Well, I have faith that Ani will do her job. I have faith that the other people on the road won't run the red light. That doesn't mean that they're my religious icons. It means
I have faith in them. What it says, though, is that if you have faith, then that means that you are acknowledging that there's a God.
No, not at all. Like I have faith in the fact that that the sun will come up in the morning. That doesn't mean that I worship the sun as a god.
Well, you know something, the notion of faith is a religious thing. It doesn't come from the worldly thing. Faith that comes from the, like you said, it's a spiritual, it's a godly thing. So if you
as a writer, I can tell you, words are my obsession. And so I always like to look at the etymology of a word, in other words, the roots and where it comes from, because that tells us how that word entered our language, what other languages it came from, whether it was Latin or Greek or Indo-European. And in fact, faith comes from a root which means simply believing in and thinking that such and such is so. It has nothing to do with religion. Religion, actually, as a word, comes from the Latin, and it comes from religio, which means regimentation. It actually is a word related to the Roman legions. It means obedience. So religion is about hierarchical structures, in a sense, and that's fine for people who choose those, but they don't have a right to inflict that on anyone else. Faith is a synonym, meaning the same thing as I think that, I believe that, I think that this is true. It is not connected even with spirituality, much less with religion.
Ma'am,
I know you're not going to believe that.
I'm not going to believe that because, first of all, I'm not going to look to anybody because, you know, we're as human beings, we're finite. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to let some individual with finite information, finite intelligence, speak to me on things that are beyond our comprehension. And faith is definitely a religious thing. Faith is an agent. It's an agent.
Well, but isn't that what you do when you go to church, sir, if you listen to the minister?
I assemble myself because the Bible say for people, that's what people are supposed to do. They're supposed to assemble themselves.
Supposed to do.
Yeah. And I guess my question for you, sir, though, is since the topic today is around the joining of church and state, you know, you certainly have your religious beliefs, and that's wonderful, and you're more than entitled to them.
Yes, indeed.
And we certainly have ours. And so I guess the crux here is, does the state have any business actually regulating or emphasizing one path, one spiritual path or religious path over another?
Well, I don't necessarily think that, and it's not a way to even look at it. I think it's totally impossible to separate the social from the political.
Well, I agree with that.
A person, whatever person's vocation is in life, they bring to that vocation what they believe in.
Yes, it's true.
And there's no way you can separate that. So it's not even rational to think that people in political offices are not going to impose their beliefs on society because they can't help it.
Well, let's check it out. Let's look at a case in point. Let's look at gay marriage and the right for me to marry my partner of 12 years. It's pushed by the churches to say, no, in fact, the state has to deny this right. But there's really no secular reason to deny that right. And in fact, several European countries are now recognizing gay unions and gay marriage. So, again, how would you feel people being influenced by their own personal beliefs interfering with other people's rights to live their lives as they see fit?
Well, you know, certain people that the only way I can explain that is that there are certain people that have a certain belief, and if that belief is reinforced by the religious material they read, which certain religious materials call for certain people to bear witness to. And in their own way, I think it's their way to try to get the gospel out there.
Can
I put something in
here?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Okay, yeah, two quick thoughts. Earlier this year, it's a great year for me, although I may have to go into hiding afterwards. I came out with a novel, which in a sense is the fiction version of Fighting Words and their sort of siblings, called The Burning Time. And it's about a woman who fought back against the Inquisition. We always think of the Inquisition as being such an incredibly victimizing time, but there were, in fact, people who fought back. The Burning Time is about one particular such woman. Now, the Inquisition, actually there were three, is a perfect example. This was a pure fun thing for me because I was able to get the politics out there, but to do it as an artist and to do it with horses and torches and great feasts and, you know, and just have
right.
fun as a writer. But the Burning Time was in fact a period of over 600 years in which as many as 9 million people were burned, hanged, tortured, executed, etc., over three different inquisitions. That's a case where somebody's belief or faith in a particular religion and religious system created absolute total havoc. For example, the plague that swept Europe was caused by the burning of cats, which were thought to be familiars of witches. And when all the cats had been destroyed, the rats who carried bubonic plague ran rampant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing I wanted to put in. Another is in terms of, you know, the accusation that people who are atheists or agnostics or in any event, not at one point Unitarians were accused of being infidels. Mm-hmm. Anyone who is not a evangelical Christian right person, the accusation is always, well, you have no morals. You need to have a religion in order to have morals. So it's interesting that a recent survey in the Journal of Religion and Society, I won't go into great details, but it's in the book, the volume number and how to find it, found that greater degrees of social dysfunction occurred correlated with higher religiosity. In other words, contrary to religionist claims that secularism produces moral decay, secular societies, for example, France, the Scandinavian countries, Japan, have much lower rates of homicide, of sexually transmitted diseases, of teen pregnancy, and of abortion than the U.S. does with its high rate, with our high rate of religiosities. And similarly, the more secular so-called blue states in the U.S. have lower rates of divorce, of infant mortality, of homicide, and of violence than the so-called red states where fundamentalism claims to have made its beachhead. What does that tell us?
Indeed. Well, you know, one thing we have to do right now, again, is to ask Grace, ask Edison, to join us in just, I hear them.
Hello, Grace and Edison.
Good morning. It's time to make that phone call. What a great interview this has been, and what a great call that is. That just was. I really like the fact that we get calls from people that aren't jumping on and saying, yeah, what you said. What they're saying is they're thinking, and they're trying to express their points of view, and this is where you can do it.
That's right.
Ani and Melody, you did a great job of allowing someone to express their views, and I don't think you're going to see that on Lars. Well, oops, sorry.
Call
503-232-8818. Call now. We need you to call. We've got a huge goal ahead of us. We've taken a little bite out of it. We need to keep biting. So
Trump,
call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
This fabulous book could be yours.
It's a great book, and you can get that for a $60 minimum pledge. That's $5 a month if you go the EFT route. And I do have some folks to thank. And these are all renewing members. We have Joyce from Southeast Portland, Eric and Laura from Northeast, Maria from Tigard, and Lisa from Oregon City. And these are all renewing members, but we want to hear from new members, too.
Please join us.
We
$60 pledge will help us get to our $1,500 goal. It costs you 16 cents a month if you could do that EFT thing. $5 a month. It's painless. It's you won't even know it happened. Call 503.
You won't even know it happened. You'll have amnesia.
8818.
You'll wake up tomorrow and go, wow, did I join
Cable
yesterday?
I'm lying. In the interest of full disclosure, you will know it happens because suddenly everything you hear on Cable will sound sweeter.
And you'll have this sweet sense of ownership, too. You know, the fact that you are part of this amazing radio station. You know, I just love listening to the kind of ideas that are being put out here because this is really about our heritage, you know, and we have to really take it back, you know, so that when we hear people saying, wow, this is a Christian country, we can come back at them and say, no, this is not a Christian country, and explain why. And in order to do that, it's really good to read this book by Fighting Words by Robin Morgan. And you can get that for $60 minimum pledge, $5 a month. And if you call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266, you can get that book and you can become an owner of KABU.
That's right. You can participate in this process in a more personal way, in a way that actually has an impact, that actually helps us continue to do these excellent radio programs like Ani and Melody are doing here. You know, I just wanted to mention that I was there at the rollout of the In God We Trust thing. I remember when they made that change because I was going to school at the time, and we always did the Pledge of Allegiance at the beginning of the school day. And they came out and said, okay, from now on, we're going to do it this way. And I was young enough that I wasn't really that curious as to why it happened, but it always seemed to me like, gee, I thought it was fine the way it was.
You know, there was a young man in my grade school class. I graduated from high school in 1970, and in sixth grade, there was a young man whose name I still remember, who apparently he was, I believe he was Jewish, and so he refused to stand and put his hand over his heart and say the Pledge of Allegiance. He sat in his seat while we said it. And I'll never forget him, and I was so impressed by that. And I thought, good for him. I wish I had the nerve to say I'm not going to say it too, you know. And I think that he really was, that small act stayed with me forever. And I still think about him sometimes, and it's, you know, one person can make such a huge impact
on
people.
And one person can make a huge impact here at KBOO today by calling 503-232-8818. I want to say that one again, 503, thank you, 232-8818, or outside the Portland calling area. This is a free call, 1-877-500-5266. And wasn't it Sinclair Lewis who said that when fascism comes to America, there'll be a flag, it'll be carrying a flag in one hand and the Bible in the other?
I believe so. That's right. That's right. And, you know, we have about, $1,100 more to go on our goal.
Oh, my goodness.
And
let's go, people.
Know we can do it. We have a half an hour. I know we can do it. We've done it before. We really want to make Ma'ani and Melody proud here.
Well, and don't forget that not only for a $60 pledge, you can get Robin Morgan's wonderful book, Fighting Words, but a really great way to make a pledge is to pledge $10 a month, $120. It sounds like a lot of money, but $10 a month is a very painless amount. Mm-hmm. And that's an excellent amount of money to pledge. It's very easy to do, and yet it's a sustaining membership. It gives KBOO a nice shot in the arm, and if only, like, you know, 10 more people called up and made that pledge, then we would reach our goal easily.
Absolutely.
And don't forget that Chris Andre is still contributing that little extra
$10 additional for
every pledge.
And I want to point out also, we do not have an unlimited supply of this book, too. So,
no, we don't.
So please keep that in mind. And I loved what Robin said about women being the canaries in the mine.
So true.
I think that is so true. And if men would just listen to those canaries once in a while, they might find out what's stinking up the place.
Well, there you go.
I'm going to add something to your pledge which is that if folks call in and get the free book and pledge to support KBOO, which is a win-win on all sides, they can, if they want an autographed copy, obviously I'm in New York and you're in Portland, and that's a little bit hard, but how about this? They can write to me at my website, which is simply www.robinmorgan.us. And tell me their name and their address, they can write to when they get to the website, they'll see how to contact me, and I will sign a book plate specifically for them and send them that book plate that they can put in
Fabulous.
The book that they will get for free if they, in fact, support KBOO.
That's very exciting.
Amazing.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you, Robin.
And how you do that, you just call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO, and that signed book, autographed by Robin Morgan, could be yours.
And say you're surreptitiously listening at work, which I know people do sometimes, and you can't make a phone call, well, just come go to our website, and you can choose the Join Now button, and you can pick up some gifts that way, too. And that's a great and painless way of doing it as well, of joining up as well.
Call 503-232-8818. That's the Portland number, 503-232-8818. And outside the Portland area, down the Willamette Valley, out to Gorge, 1-877. This is for you folks who are in the Couve as well, 1-877-500-5266. This is an opportunity for you to support this kind of radio that cannot be heard anywhere else.
Yeah, that is for sure.
All right, well, thanks very much. You everybody keep calling that number, 503-232-8818. And let's get back to our conversation with Robin Morgan. Thank you for being so patient there.
My delight.
I want to repeat our call-in number for those of you who'd like to ask a question or make a comment, 503-231-8187. And we do have a caller waiting, so let's talk to you now. Caller, you're on the air. Hello, caller. Caller, are you there?
Hello.
There you are.
Yeah,
yes, you're on
I'm
the air.
Here, I guess.
Yes.
Okay,
you are,
yeah, I feel like one of those canaries with having fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue, immune dysfunction, and being the first one, and my family being on welfare, and a lot of other huge issues. But anyway, unfortunately, I guess I'm not alone. But I do want to say something. I'm wearing a heart monitor, and I've worn it before, but I realize that it's not going to stop what's going to happen. I'm going to die, and whether I'm ready or not. And I just want to say a couple of things, whether they help or not. Are people still there?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. One of the things I'd like to see happen in this country and the world is males redefining masculinity. That masculinity does not mean mainly violence in the world, whether it's physical or psychological, et cetera, et cetera. And also another thing I'd like to say, we need to make, I did want to say this before I say the following. I just wonder, way back in time before things were recorded, and maybe even when the times when things started to be recorded, whether there was any honest, real sisterhood in the world. But anyway, what I want to see happen in the United States is females making real sisterhood with people in any economic or whatever, education, background, whatever, et cetera, et cetera. And I want to see it done. I know I probably will be ready.
Creating sisterhood across class lines.
I just want to say, and you know, I believe it has to be done without technology, without computers. It needs to be done, I don't know, face to face, flesh to flesh. But that's all I want to say. And there's a lot more, but I know other people need to speak too. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your call.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. You're right on all counts. No matter how amazing a tool the is, it still requires folks on the street to change things. We need to march, we need to organize, we need to use all the tools, including this amazing new one, but there's nothing like looking somebody in the eye and an embrace.
Absolutely.
And I do think that there is true sisterhood out there, and I think I've seen it in my lifetime, and I know it's been around since the dawn of time, that, you know, humans wouldn't have made it this far if we didn't have true human connection.
Yes, I think that's very true. And now we're beginning to understand the scientific reasons for it. There was a study recently at Stanford about a year ago that showed that there are literally different responses that men tend to have. What we've always assumed is the human response, the fight or flight adrenaline response to being threatened. Women have what the Stanford researchers called a, quote, tend and befriend response. Whatever they come up with something new that is now scientifically proven to me, I think, another reason why women should be running the planet.
Right.
Planet might be a little healthier.
Since men have had their shot for about 2,000 years now, if they haven't done too well, I think we need to serve our shot myself.
I think you have a real point.
You know, I want to just for a moment draw our attention back to the religious right and the theocratic movement that's really gaining ground within this administration, as you said, really concertedly planning and concentrating power for the last 26, 30 years.
Yeah.
What do you see at this moment, like the next area where they're really, well, I'm not going to say the area, but what do you see on the horizon, the ever current dangers right now?
Well, you know, I mean, they say it. It's just that it's so far out that we, with our sense of irony or, you know, humor or whatever, we think, okay, now seriously, what do you really mean?
Right.
But they say it. I mean, here is a quote from Randall Terry that I have in the book. He's the head of Operation Rescue, the militant anti-choice group. On one occasion, he declared that Supreme Court Justices Blackmun and Stevens are enemies of Christ and should be assassinated. I mean, but, you know, he's walking around. Nobody can. But here's one that just blisters the mind. Quote, I want you to let a wave of hatred wash over you.
Right.
Yes, hate is good.
Wow.
Our goal is a Christian nation. We have a biblical duty. We are called on by God to conquer this country. We don't want equal time. We don't want pluralism. Close quote.
Sounds like now, something out of 1984 or Mein Kampf.
It is. And that is somebody talking about a country founded by Jefferson and Adams and Madison who, I mean, good grief, Jefferson took a copy of the New Testament and cut it up and discarded the parts that he didn't like, which were anything supernatural, miracles, saints, angels, you know, virgin birth, which he compared to the birth of Minerva from the brain of Zeus and as a nice myth, but completely unrealistic. And he kept the parts that he felt were interesting and heartening philosophical wisdom from whoever might have been a historical Jesus Christ. And he thought, oh, well, this is an interesting philosopher, sort of like Socrates. So he put those parts, he saved those parts, and he did away with all the supernatural, what he called superstitions. And you can even still get a copy of the Jefferson Bible today. I think Beacon Press has brought it back into print. Now, look at those two examples of the founder of this country, a product of the Enlightenment, interested in science, with a sense of awe about the universe that is not connected to an old man with a white beard sitting on a throne saying you should be stoned to death for such and such, with the comment by Randall Terry about we want hate to wash over you. So you have to understand, which has been hard for me to really take on board because it's so surreal, that the most extreme part of the extreme religious right wants Armageddon. They believe that if, in fact, environment is destroyed, if the Middle East turns into a nuclear situation, if the world is ended, then Christ will come again, and there will be the rapture, and there will be, you know, they will ascend to heaven, you know, we will all, who cares, we'll go to hell, we'll be bad people. So you're with the extremists of the extreme, similarly to extremists in Islam or in Hinduism or in Judaism or in any religion, you are dealing outside the frame of reference where you can, in effect, argue. But with the vast middle, most of the people who are following the evangelical right, I believe, are really sincere people of faith. And what makes me very angry is the way they and their fears are manipulated by the politicians. I think that no matter how much has been done, it's not enough for the ultra-extremists. They're disappointed even with George Bush. They feel he's a raging moderate, which really scares the hell out of you. And I think people have to get to the polls this fall. I think people have to stiffen the spines of the Democrats who need a spinal transplant. But most of all, we've got to start looking at running for offices in our own local communities. For years, the religious right has been getting on school boards and then changing textbooks, making Mark Twain illegal to read in public libraries.
Unbelievable.
We've got to do it at the grassroots level, which used to always be our forte. I mean, you know, we're real folks. And religious liberty and the liberty from religion go hand in hand in this country. That's the great wisdom and our own heritage. You know, Ben Franklin was asked at the end of the Constitutional Convention when he came out and somebody said, okay, so what kind of government have you given us? You know, it could have been parliamentary, it could have been many different forms. And he said, smiling, we have given you a republic if you can keep it.
Uh-huh.
So the question is, can we keep it?
Indeed, can we? I just want to throw in there one last thing from the book, and I know we have one call, and you need to leave very soon. But the Texas Republican Party platform of 2002 just seems like a good way to sum up, oh, my God, time to get to work, people. Our party pledges to do everything within its power to dispel the myth of separation of church and state.
And that's when George Bush was governor.
That's right.
I also want to remind people that if they do, I hope, pledge to support KABU, if they get a book, they can write to me at my website, robinmorgan.us, and I will sign a book plate if they write care of the website and tell me their address and their name, and I will personalize that copy for them.
Because that
KABU
is so cool.
This support.
So wonderful.
Thank you so much. We do have one last phone call, and I was hoping that this person could be very quick with a question or comment.
Yes. Oh, hello?
Hi.
Yes,
it's you.
I can hardly hear you. I forgot what I was going to ask. There's been so many things going through my mind as I listen to...
Well, we just have about 1 minute, so...
well, I just like to say that I find it almost impossible to get through to these cultists, really, these fundamentalists. My sister is one. And no matter what you say, no matter how eloquent and coherent, they don't hear. And I'd like to say, too, that this current wave of hatred really is based on what Mary Daly calls necrophilia, a love of death. And
it's
totally patriarchal, and I think it's a backlash to the feminist movement of the 70s.
In
I agree,
part.
And I think that one of the things we have to cling to and remember is that if they're about thanatos and necrophilia and love of death, we're about eros in the deep sense, about love of life.
That's right.
And for the planet and for each other and even for them, which ironically enough is the heart of Christianity. I'm not a Christian, but it seems to me that's what Christianity was supposedly about.
Yes, very much so.
And I hope that this little book equips you with tools. Maybe you can't get through to your fundamentalist relative, but at least it'll equip you with tools to argue. I hope that's the aim, to put your own heritage back in your own hands.
Well, we need a vision of the world we want, to not just having to fight their sick vision.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But we happen to be the heirs of a remarkable vision, not only the ones that women are creating now, but even the ones that the framers of this country, the great experiment, as they called it, have left us. And that's our heritage and our patriotism. We shouldn't let anybody take it from us. That's ridiculous. It belongs to you and to me and to all of us.
Right.
Thank you so much
for your call. And Robin Morgan, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you. I haven't had so much fun in a long time.
Well, it was great. I wish we could keep you even longer, but unfortunately, time is fleeting away.
And perhaps we'll just have to visit again
sometime.
That's
right.
That would be wonderful.
Thanks very much.
Much love to you all.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
And much love and respect to you, Robin Morgan.
Keep on fighting.
Robin Morgan is the author of over 20 books, her latest being Fighting Words, A Toolkit for Combating the Religious Right, which we have for you as a thank you gift when you call 503-232-8818.
Let's go to those gurus of giving.
Good morning again.
What a great program.
That was an amazing program.
I hate to be so self-congratulating as a station, but that's radio, folks.
Yes.
That's what it's all about. I'd like to say thank you to Jeanette from Vancouver, a new member. Marianne from Lake Oswego is renewing.
Yay.
We got Henry from Vancouver, new member.
Yay, Henry.
Marion from Southwest Portland is a new member.
Hey, Marion.
Thomas
Yay.
From Southeast Portland's renewing, as is Susan from Lake Oswego. Anna in Northeast Portland is a new member. And Eleanor in Southeast Portland is renewing. Thank you so much. And they did it so simply. They just went to the phone and called 503-232-8818. And looking at where these people are located, they didn't have to use our free phone number, but I'll put it out there for those of you listening in Hood River and Corvallis, 1-877-500-5266.
Now, we still have some dollars to go here, and I want to really promote Robin Morgan's great book, new book, Fighting Words. I know I'm going to get a copy. And if you call in and make a minimum of a $60 pledge, and that could be a $5 a month electronic funds transfer, so it's very affordable, you can ask for this great book, Fighting Words. And once you get the book, you can send Robin an email at her on her website. And I think it's what?
www.robinmorgan.us.
You can write to her, and she will send you a faceplate with an autographed faceplate, which is really, really generous.
And it's just the coolest thing.
It is very cool.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, I worked at the Women's Union and Resource Center at Portland State University in, like, 1989. And we brought Robin Morgan to town to speak that year when she had just written The Demon Lover. And I have just long admired her. It's the first chance I've had to actually interview Robin Morgan. And what a warm and intellectual and analytical mind she has. I am just very happy that she chose to be with us this morning, and that she's also offering to autograph faceplates and send them on out.
That was a special love to KBOO, I think.
And that came through
very sincerely. She is what I would call not only a clear thinker, but a clear speaker.
Yes.
You understand. It makes sense when she talks to us. Call 503-232-8818. Continue the interviews the one this morning with Robin Morgan on this great radio program, or call 1-877-500-KBOO and become a member today.
You know, one of the things I really love about Pledge Drive is that people come down to the station and they answer phones and they get on the radio and talk and ask for money and all that. And you know,
give
us money. But it's kind of a party, you know. It really is. And we've got some food here and coffee, and it's just really kind of a fun environment.
What it is, you're sharing something that everybody else shares an interest in.
I was even groping Edison's toes earlier.
It's true. It's true. It's
before
absolutely right.
9 in the morning?
Yes.
Before 7:30 in the morning.
Goodness. And it was a lovely sight, too, I must say. I was witness to the act. But
the pictures will be on the website later today. And you can see them
group
by calling.
Groups in the back room.
You can see these pictures of Melody
gently caressing
Edison's toes by calling 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO.
Again, 503-232-8818. Get a copy of Fighting Words, a toolkit for combating the religious right. It is, I have to say, it was a very quick read, but I learned quite a bit from it. It is action-packed. And I have to say, I appreciate a quick read now and again.
Yes.
Robin is just an amazing analytical thinker. She's able to pull together all kinds of information from the framers. As she said, there's an interesting page of comparing quotes from Hitler, actually,
yes.
Mein Kampf, and letters from Hitler to folks like, you know, Reverend Jerry Falwell and George W. Bush in a campaign statement.
Wow, what a
they
surprise.
Say frighteningly yeah. similar things about their, you know, being chosen by God to lead the nation and that sort of thing.
Well, I've been chosen by God to tell you that you better call 503-232-8818 before it's too late, or he'll smite you. Oh, no, wait.
No.
That's
wrong
the strong show,
God,
honey.
Wrong God.
How about this? Everybody down at KBOO loves you, and they want you to call 503-232-8818. There, that's better.
The universe is needing you to make that
that's
call.
Right,
503-232-8818. You know, we are getting a lot of phone calls right now, which is really great and really exciting.
We're trying to make that goal.
And we're trying to make that goal.
$1,500, and we still have a few hundred dollars to go.
Right. Come on, you can do it.
1-877. Say you're down in Salem. 1-877-500-5266. Make that call. We really want to hear from people from outside the immediate area.
That's right. Don't forget that every time you call, that Chris Andre is going to chip in an extra $10 to your contribution.
Chris,
very generously.
Poor Chris. Is she going to go bankrupt?
I hope not.
If Chris does go bankrupt, it's because of it's for something that she loves.
That's right.
People join the community radio that we actually call KBOO. It's actually more than that. It's a family. It's a huge family. And it's a family that has all the good things and all the bad things that any family has, but it's human. Call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
Edison's the crazy uncle.
Oh, dear me. And I'm the cousin up in the attic. But it's sort of like this is a community radio station, operative word community.
That's right.
And it is absolutely true. So become part of the community. Support this radio station. You get to have a voice here. It's not about, some places, you make your membership call, then you never hear from anyone again unless you need money, unless they need money. Here, you are a part of this every day. 503-232-8818. You can come on down. You can become a member. You can become a volunteer. You can get on committees. You can run for the board. You really do have a say here. And
for a $60 pledge, you can get a copy of Robin Morgan's new book, Fighting Words, A Toolkit for Combating the Religious Right.
And you can get it autographed
personally. You can get an autographed. We've got contact information for you to go to Robin's website. She's personally will autograph a page for you and send that to you. It's really something very special.
It's very special, yeah.
It's something that you can share with friends, with family, with folks that maybe aren't so sure about these issues, with people that you've actually heard say things like, well, we were founded on Judeo-Christian principles because we weren't, okay?
Right.
We weren't. And it's really important to get these sorts of facts circulating within the community and broadening the public discourse.
Yeah.
503-232-8818. We are all about broadening the public discourse here at KBOO.
That's right.
And, I heard you say become part of the community, but I actually would put out there that if you are listening, you are already a part of our community.
That's right.
What you need
stand
to do is step
counted.
Forward.
Become a card-carrying member
That's
of the community.
That's right.
And speaking of
a
getting all the
card-carrying member and actually step forward and putting your money to work for your community, in your community, a gift from yourself to everyone.
That's right.
That's exactly right. I want to mention that, following this, Marlena Smith will host her electronic
that's
salon.
Right.
She will be speaking with Shelley Lewis, and she'll also be talking with Michael Mead, an author, mythologist, and storyteller.
He is incredible.
We mistakenly yesterday said that he was going to be at the old church tonight. It actually was last night. We apologize for any confusion there. But if you did go to that, you might call during Marlena's show and say how it went. And the other thing is look forward to the interviews that she's going to be having on this. But you need to contribute right now so we can make our $1,500 goal. We're getting closer. Call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO.
You know, if you don't have a whole lot of money and you want to make a contribution, we do have electric funds transfer, and that's a great way to do it. You can do a $60 pledge, and you can do it for $5 a month right out of your checking account. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, you could do $120, make $120 for a $10 a month.
Or $240.
You know, $240. You know, whatever you can afford. But, you know, it's very affordable. You're not giving away a bunch of change at the same time, and it's kind of a nice way to, you know, make sure that KBOO gets a certain amount every month to pay our bills. You know,
we've got bills.
We've got a pretty significant electric bill. We've got, you know, salaries. We've got all this. It comes to about $2,000 a day to support KBOO. And so if you want to continue listening to this great radio and people like Robin Morgan and, you know, just all these other great folks we have coming up later today, then really support that.
I'd like to say thanks to Pat called in with an extra contribution. Lois in Southwest Portland renewed, and
excellent.
Diana in Southeast Portland renewed, and Pat from Northeast Portland. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, all of you.
Excellent.
Thank you.
And the phone is continuing to ring.
We love that.
Thank you
so much for your support. Keep it coming in. 503-232-8818. We are here at the very beginning of our News and Public Affairs Day special. We have, 14 hours of news and public affairs. Nothing but information coming your way until 9 o'clock tonight.
If you're a news junkie, this is your favorite day of the year.
At 9 o'clock, Marlena will be there again. She was Shelley Lewis, author of Naked Republicans, a full frontal exposure.
Ooh, I don't even want to think about it.
She'll be interviewing Michael Mead, the author and mythologist and storyteller, with his new book, Water of Life, Initiation and Tempering of the Souls. Very special stuff.
That's
all true. Yeah. At 11, we have Democracy Now with Amy Goodman. And at 12:30, we're going to have Dr. Helen Caldicott, author of The Nuclear Power. Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. You know, she was in Portland recently, and KBOO went out and captured what she had to say. This was very recent. The same thing happened when Cindy Sheehan was in town. KBOO was there, and we bring this to you. I don't think you're going to hear that on the other station.
However, the Cindy Sheehan talk was just October 2nd, October 2nd, and here we have it for you right now. You know, she's the recent author of Not One More Mother's Child. She is an impassioned speaker for peace and an end to the Iraq War. And, you know, you're going to want to hear that talk.
Yeah.
So stay tuned to KBOO, your community radio station, all day long. We just have a few more seconds, really.
Call 503-232-8818. Help us reach our goal. Help KBOO continue this excellent, excellent program.
Absolutely. And thanks so much to everyone who's already called. Really appreciate it.
Yes.
Thanks, and especially
thanks
welcome
to, you guys.
To the new members. And I don't know about Naked Republicans, though. That kind of scares
me.
Yeah, that really scares me.
Thanks to Robin Morgan, too, for personalizing her contribution to our membership.
That's right. Absolutely.
503-232-8818. Step forward. Support your community radio station now.
And keep on being positively revolting till next week.
Less than 1 week remains to submit your entry in KBOO's Fall Sweepstakes, where a single lucky winner will receive a $2,000 shopping spree all around Portland. This shopping spree features 10 $200 gift certificates from local businesses, including Bike Central Co-op, Buffalo Gardens, Cotton Cloud Futons and Furniture, Higgins Restaurant and Bar, Mirador Community Store, Oregon Mountain Community, Portland Saturday Market, The Rebuilding Center, Spa Wilhelmina, and Susan Hebert Imports. Entering KBOO's sweepstakes is free and easy, but you won't win if you don't enter. To enter, submit your entry form to KBOO so that we receive it before 5 p.m. on Friday, October 13th. We'll announce the winner on air Saturday, October 14th at noon. If you haven't received your sweepstakes entry form yet and would like one, contact KBOO's membership department at 503-231-8032, extension 207, or send an email to membership@kboo.org.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Gazelle Full Circle Resale. Now accepting like-new natural fiber clothing, jewelry, accessories, and curios. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and can be reached at 503-284-4192. The time is 9:01. You're listening to KBOO. Stay tuned for Marlena's Electronic Salon.
Good morning. Welcome to KABU. You're tuned to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 on the FM band right here in Portland. My name's Marlena Smith. This is the Electronic Salon. We are in Pledge Drive, as you probably know. Today is our special day, News and Public Affairs, and I think we have a pretty interesting lineup. We have Stephen Bailey pre-recorded because Stephen is on a family holiday. He has a few remarks to make. Then that's going to be followed by an interesting interview with a woman whose name is Shelley Lewis. She's a former news producer and a co-creator of Air America. She's written a book called Naked Republicans, exposing all sorts of things about the insiders in the Congress, the people that are making a lot of news right now and a lot of their duplicitous thinking and behavior. And then that will be followed by Michael Mead. You know Michael Mead from the mythology series we've been running on this program in the last season. He's got a book out titled The Water of Life, and he is also pre-recorded. And the reason everybody's pre-recorded is because I was on jury duty earlier this week, and I was not aware of whether or not I'd be here. So we set up a show, and now all I have to do is sit back and listen with all of you. The music you heard was from the Buddha Cafe. That piece was titled The Spirit Level, and it's a wonderful CD that I like a lot. Kind of alters the consciousness and gets us in a whole nother space. Astrologically, I did not bring the Mountain Astrologer today because our time is so tight, but I did want to tell you that we are having the last quarter moon phase, which is a time of challenge. It's the last phase in the moon before we go to the new moon in a week. And this last quarter moon has to do with the conflict, tension, etc. between Libra, which rules the mind and thinking and balance and beauty, and Cancer, the sign of nurturing. And the theme that you really sort of want to focus on with these two planets in challenging aspect is the relationship between the head and the heart. So you want to think about ways of balancing the emotional content, and you also want to think about ways of humanizing or sensitizing or putting emotion into what you think. So it's one of those kinds of aspects where you're sort of trying to balance two components of yourself that may at any point in time take a separate track. You want to sort of try to bring those together or at least find some way of synthesizing those elements in your life. Okay, I'm going to now go right away to Stephen Bailey and his remarks, then we'll come back and talk to you some more.
Thank you, Marlena. It's wonderful to be back on your show, another season starting in October. It's always great to share your wisdom and have you bring in your comments and thoughts as we take callers from our listening audience and as we interview guests. There are a lot of good things that we can look towards this year. We are in our 38th year of KBOO Radio, and that itself is a wonderful accomplishment. Radio here in Portland that started during the times of the Vietnam War, when the corporate media and the standard media was not expressing all of the views. And we continue today to bring you information and speakers and programming that is not significantly influenced by the wishes and demands of corporate America. It is wonderful to be with all of you out there in the radio land, and I'm doing this recording in advance as I'm out of town today, but we'll be back in November with a live show and hopefully take some of your calls. KBOO was one of the earliest stations in America to give a voice to natural medicine, and specifically Dr. Jerry Slusher, who started in the 1970s with a show that continues today in its 30th plus year, has Health Watch on Mondays and provides some additional insight into questions of medical science, of nutrition, of lifestyle, of spirituality. And you can always tune in on that show as well. Took note of an interesting article in the Oregonian on Tuesday, September 19th by Robert Wolk. And it was entitled, "The Probable Carcinogen Raises Concern About Chips Fries." This is a story about a topic that has been being discussed for a number of years, the development of a potential carcinogen whenever we cook foods that combine starches and proteins. These are called acrylamides, and they exist in varying degrees depending upon the temperature, the quality of the food. They are found at some of the highest levels in French fries and potato chips and some of the deep fried foods. And it has been shown that these do have the potential to cause cancer in animals and that they represent a potential carcinogen. Mr. Wolk says, "Do I hear the raw food crowd shouting, 'I told you so'?" Maybe the echo. The raw food crowd has been talking about acrylamides for many years, and as is often the case, some of the important information about diet, food, nutrition doesn't get into the mainstream press until it has been out there in the journals and in the public discussions for many years. There is a concern about deep-fried foods. There is a concern about the way we eat, the standard American diet, with the acronym SAD, and its ever-increasing development of many of the chronic degenerative diseases that plague our country, our families, our communities, and represent a significant portion of the medical health care crisis here in America. But you don't have to be totally raw to improve your life and your quality of life. But this information that came out a few years ago from Europe about the acrylamides actually came out without the name of the chemical many decades ago by a researcher, Dr. Bertrand Benner, who decades ago showed that when humans consume cooked foods, there's a dramatic increase within a few minutes, 15 minutes, of the total number of white blood cells in our bloodstream, increase of WBCs or white blood cells by 6,000 to 8,000, which takes us up into the numbered WBCs of an infection. When we do a blood count on people and find that their white blood cells are above a normal of 12,000, and this would, for a normal 6,000, bring them up above that they have a significant infection. And he found that these cooked foods significantly stimulated a response, an inflammatory response by the immune system to deal with something in the cooking process. He found that there was no increase in WBCs when humans consumed raw foods, those foods that were here on nature before the discovery of fire and before the excessive combustion of foods that has dramatically increased in the past few hundred years. A Dr. Ralph Weiss from Medford did an incredible research study more than 10 years ago following Bertrand Benner's work, where he fed over 100 people, doing them one at a time, overtime in his laboratory, 2 ounces of raw food, followed by a standard cooked meal. When people started their meal with raw food, there was a reduction by greater than 80% of this white blood cell inflammatory increase. And that brings us to some real simple aspects of helping to improve our health. And since most diseases involve a significant level of inflammation, cardiovascular disease, cancers, diabetes, the retinopathies and vascular problems of diabetes, if we start our meal with a raw salad, if we start our meal with some fruit as they do in India and Asia, then we're going to have some greater health benefits, and studies have also shown that this improves the efficiency of digestion, getting more of the nutrients out of our foods and more into our body. Another interesting aspect, and we sometimes forget the old studies, but back in 1928 at George Washington Hospital in I believe, Washington, D.C., they took humans and fed them 2 ounces of raw starch, cook starch or corn syrup starch of this nature. Sugars, simple sugars, are used for testing diabetes and result in a significant increase in serum levels, blood sugar in the serum. And yet when humans were given 2 ounces of raw starch, there was an average of only a 6-point increase, showing virtually no diabetic potentials in these foods. We sponsored the Raw Spirit Conference here in Portland with Norman Cousins in August, September, and we in Portland are recognized as one of the top raw foods regions in the world, certainly in the United States. And there are a lot of local and regional cooks and authors that can help you look at integrating more raw foods into your diet. If you only have 10% raw foods, maybe this year's target should be to get up to 20 or 30. A lot of people try going from a standard American diet to becoming 100% raw food, and that is generally an exercise in futility because it is such a dramatic change. So just increase the amount of raw foods, and there will be, according to the scientific research, a significant improvement of energy, health, decrease of inflammation, and some benefits to be derived. I want to talk about some of the good things, bad things that are existing out there in the few minutes I'm taking this month for my show. And in the aspects of good things, bad things, bad thing, plastics. Good things, not using plastics. We've had an ever-growing amount of research on the exudates, or the vapored and heat-extracted products of plastics in our foods, and what damage they can do, mimicking hormones, worsening our health, potentially adding to cancers. A general rule is the softer the plastic, like the plastic wraps, the greater the amount that heat and sunlight release of these chemicals. And so preferably you're not going to be using these. Use the waxed paper to wrap your children's sandwiches. Don't put foods immediately in plastic. Certainly don't believe that plastics can be used in microwave if you choose to use a microwave oven in the first place. And look towards either the highest quality of human plastic containers, or preferably go back to glass, because we have almost no damage occurring when we store foods in glass. Another important aspect is bad thing, non-organic foods, good things, organic foods. We have such a limited evaluation of the true nutrient properties of organic foods based on the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the FDA. We use ballpark estimates of food quality, and we miss many of the micronutrients that help us to prevent disease and help to inspire and support a healthy human body. We have a great number of farmers markets and three great co-ops here in Portland, Alberta, Peoples, and Food Front, where you can get an abundance of organic foods. But it is a very wise investment to increase that percentage of organic foods that you have in your diet so that you're not only getting yourself maximum nutrition from your foods, letting them be some early preventative medicines so that you can hopefully avoid some of the high cost of disease-oriented health care, but also so that you limit the amount of pesticides and chemicals that are going to be out there. In the U.S., legislative body, Senate Bill 3128, is a number you might want to write down because it removes the ability of state to set standards of organic foods and food quality and safety and labeling and puts it all in the FDA. And we could do an entire show and maybe invite an FDA spokesperson, but talking about how the FDA doesn't necessarily do objective research based on human safety, but does receive channeled research by pharmaceutical and food companies and approves their research designs and then lets it out. GMOs, genetically modified foods, are a classic example of the lack of quality objective regulatory actions by the FDA. According to Jeffrey Smith in a recent talk I heard, the only GMO food that had animal studies presented to the FDA was the Flavor Saver tomato that was one of the first foods brought onto the American market. When the developers of this tomato set up an experiment to feed it to rats, the rats would not voluntarily eat this tomato. They had no data for it, so that as a result, they had to force feed the rats these genetically modified foods. In this study, 7 out of 20 rats developed gastroenteritis, had physical health problems, and 7 out of 40, which is a fairly high number, ended up dying. Since that period of time, the FDA does not require animal testing on GMOs. Typically, there is an industry panel that puts together recommendations and descriptions of the genetically modified foods, and then the FDA almost universally accepts this to go on to production and utilization. This is good for PETA. It's good for animal research. We're not subjecting animals to these foods, these unnatural foods. But we are going to have a bad side of that, which is that the humans are being used as the guinea pigs or the test species for these genetically modified foods that are being described as safe, but objective scientific studies have found that the transcribed DNA from some of these foods does migrate into the bacterial gut, so where plants may be resistant to some certain chemicals, we now may be breeding friendly bacterium or other bacterium that become resistant to chemicals and impact our ability to treat infections. Also, in Norway, significant studies have been done with animals and genetically modified foods and find these transcribed genetic DNA particles in all the tissues of the animals. So it is something that you want to, if you have that direction, call our senators, call our congresspeople, and tell them that we need to have full disclosure. We need to have a more conservative approach to the creation of new foods. We want to see them removed from school lunch programs, and we'd like to see them labeled here in Oregon. And finally, Marlena, as we close today, you asked me a question as we talked on the phone before this show about insulin resistance and vitamin E. And there's been a large number of contradictory studies with vitamin E in recent years, talking about it having less positive impact, and certainly this one is saying that it has a negative impact. One of the real important things to consider in vitamins or supplements, plants and whole foods are certainly the highest quality of nutrients, but a great number of the vitamin E products on the market have been oxidized and broken down into non-vitamin E oxidative byproducts, which are neither functional as vitamin E and may have potential problems as oxidative peroxidation, which is what this oil goes through when it's exposed to light and oxygen, does have harmful byproducts and side effects. There are many forms of vitamin E. They're called tocopherols. There's DL-tocopherol is one of the most important ones. There's also gamma and alpha tocopherols, and there are products on the market that are called mixed or racemic that give you a broader version. Generally, humans in the past have eaten a wide variety of foods, and they've gotten a number of different carotenoids, a number of different flavonoids, a number of different tocopherols in their diet, and we don't typically like to use a single isolate. But there's also the discussion of synthetic versus natural and the concentrated synthesis of natural byproducts. So you want to, I think, supplement vitamin E. In the American diet prior to 1900, we got over 200 IUs of vitamin E in our direct conversion of wheat berries into food, whereas we now typically average around 7 IUs. This is an estimate of what we need on a daily basis. You may supplement some fresh wheat germ oil if you're not wheat sensitive. You may find some natural sources, but realize that typically the least expensive vitamin E on the market is probably the least active and not being beneficial. And when we have true synthesis of vitamins out of starting base chemicals, be they soy, corn, or petrochemicals, we end up in the chemist's lab producing molecules that often, while looking identical in the carbon linkages, are significantly different in their biologic action on people. And these are substances that may actually occupy important threshold spaces, basically like a broken down car occupying a parking space. We never get to use that parking space again. So generally speaking, you want to find a manufacturer that uses good manufacturing properties, that assays their product for freshness, that starts with natural products and extracts the existing vitamins from that plant versus using that natural product to synthesize a molecule that resembles but often may not represent the true beneficial vitamin properties of that food. This is going to be a short show. We'll be back for a normal time. I'm Dr. Stephen Bailey. Again, Marlena, and to all of you, it's great to be back this year, and I'll look forward to being with you live next month. Thank you.
And that was the voice of Dr. Stephen Bailey, a regular feature on the Electronic Salon every second Friday. Want to remind you that Dr. Bailey is a naturopathic physician who gives people advice on air and over the phone with call-ins. It's a free service. Anyone who listens can call in and get information that they can then share with their healthcare provider and make healthy decisions and choices about lifestyle. another reason to support KABU at 232-8818. And if you're outside the KABU area and you appreciate having this hour-long service every second Friday, that's 1-877-500-KABU. In conjunction with this segment of the show, I'm going to offer to you a special. We have from the WeMoon folks in Estacada copies of their beautiful wall calendar for a $60 pledge. It's filled with gorgeous art. It's an astrological lunar wall calendar with full-color art and writing from the We Moon 07 crowd, Gaia Rhythms for Women. The theme is on purpose for the wall calendar. And they have also given us a number of We Moon Gaia Rhythm books, the book calendar. And this is a gorgeous little book. It's a moon calendar, date book, daily guide to natural rhythms for women, beautiful spiral-bound 240-page book with beautiful original art, daily information on cycles of the moon printed on recycled paper with soy-based ink. It's all good and produced by members of the We Moon Collective. And I just want to tell you, I have a copy in front of me. The theme this year is On Purpose. The book is dedicated to We Moon 07, women around the globe who are on purpose working to heal our planet. The cover art in this publication every year is always extraordinary. This year it's Toni Truesdale, a piece called Breaking Through. It's about women breaking through the bitter darkness after centuries of patriarchal transition that stole the mother right, millennia of struggles against poverty, persecution, inquisition, rape, genocide, slavery, etc. And on the back cover, Gail Nagel has a wonderful piece, Sisutl, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but it's a piece from a totem from the Northwest Coast associated with the home and the power of the warrior. And in the image, we see a totem wrapped around a canoe carrying the maiden, the mother, and the crone, which is the triple goddess. These two wonderful items are available right now by calling 232-8818 and 1-877-500-KABU. A $60 pledge will get you either one of these. When you call, we also have wonderful volunteers that you can hear right now in the background who will answer the phone, which I think there are some phones open now.
And indeed there are, Marlena.
And they will give you lots of options. We have tons of music. We have CDs with jazz, reggae, Celtic, bluegrass, blues, John Lennon's Peace and Love tape or CD. We have Ani DeFranco. We have lots and lots of books. We have a special from City Bikes, a gift certificate, Hot Lips Pizza. Just call 232-8818 and tell them what you're able to pledge and ask them what thank you gifts are available. And is that you, Ani?
It is. It is me.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Marlena. How are you doing this
I'm
morning?
I'm fine. And who's that wonderful man
we
next to you?
Pear.
Yeah, thank you, Pear. Hey, Pear. Wonderful. You were just in South Dakota.
Yeah, I was visiting Pine Ridge Reservation. And
all
then
right.
I went to Jackson, Wyoming, which is a pretty rich town, a little overwhelming. Dick mm-hmm. Cheney lives there, I understand.
Oh, goodness.
Okay. Well, let's not say that word because we want to raise money for Cape.
I know.
503.
Good thought. Good thoughts.
Here. Can you folks help these nice listeners get some information?
I would love to. 503-232-8818 is the number to call. Become a member of KABU, your very own community radio station. Join KABU now or renew your membership at 503-232-8818. Pear?
Yes, and we do have some people to thank from the previous segment. Want to thank Laura from Southeast Portland. She is a new member. Gavin from North Portland renewing. Bob from Salem is renewing. Becca from North Portland is renewing. Russ from Salem is a new member. Tamara from Southeast Portland is renewing. And Kate from North Portland is renewing. Thank you one and all. And pretty soon we'll have more people to thank because the phones are ringing. And
that's
we are
right.
answering those phones. And it's real easy to do. Just call 503-232-8818. Outside the metro area, 1-877-500-5266. Or if you're sitting in your cubicle, just tap in www.kboo.fm and join. And then you do the join now button, and that'll give you a whole lot of premiums that we don't even know about here, but you know, mysterious
the
internet
mysterious
world.
Yeah. Web only premiums.
That's right. Yeah, I don't know what they are, but
well, I'm sure they're spectacular. Mm-hmm. And you know, really,
maybe a date with Bill Gates or something. I don't know.
The spectacular thing you get all year round, day in, day out, is KABU, your community radio station. Where else can you have access to this information? Where else can you hear the brilliant analytical minds of program producers like Marlena Smith? Marlena, I just have to say, Marlena was my inspiration for wanting to get involved in the News and Public Affairs Department at KABU. After listening to her for years in the late 80s, I thought, This is it. I can do this. I want to do this. She really inspired me. And especially with her amazing work with the Christic Institute. So if you have been inspired by Marlena or any of our other volunteer program producers, then this is the time you can feed back to this community that allows this to happen. 503 232-8818. Help to pay for the microphone, the soapbox, as it were, that allows this incredible airing of opinion, of information, to educate, to inspire, to inform. I do want to remind folks at what Marlena was saying earlier, $60 minimum pledge, and you could pick up a copy of the fabulous Wee Moon wall calendar. The artwork is always phenomenal. I know I have several pages from the Wee Moon calendar hung on my wall, saved year after year. There's always a couple in every edition that are just amazing, and you need to just sort of put them up and look at them forever.
Knock, knock.
Yeah. Oh, hey, who's there?
It's me. One of the things I wanted to say, because I am also a lover of the Wee Moon annual book that I regularly keep on my desk. It gives all the planetary aspects, the moon phases. It gives you information about all the signs and things to be thinking about for the year. It's written from a feminist or female perspective. It has lots of little pieces of art, lots of writing from all sorts of interesting women. And when you're sort of just cruising through, scheduling your appointments and things, and I still like doing that by hand, you get to think about, am I planning this the time of the new moon so I'll have a better result? And then you turn a page and there's a beautiful piece of poetry that just sort of captures you. So it's a totally experiential entity, as well as being a great calendar.
It is.
Thank you. I just had to say that because I love this book. I've been collecting them for years.
And that is exactly how I've felt about them. The synchronicity that often applies as you flip open, as you're thinking, oh, my God, I have to deal with this thing. And there on that page is a piece of prose or poetry that really speaks to it. And I've had that experience over and over again with the Wee Moon calendar, produced locally. I mean, right here, written and collated on the Wee Moon farm out in Estacada. So 503-232-8818, the number to call. We have a goal this morning during the fabulous Marlena's Electronic Salon here every Friday morning, well, two Friday mornings a month now, at $2,200. We know we can do that. We know that you have been great supporters of Marlena's program in the past, and we are sure that you are there to come through again. But we do need to hear from you now. We have two lines open. Do call us, 503-232-8818.
Give us a call. You know, we have the Wee Moon wall calendar. We have the Wee Moon book calendar. Now, those are two different items. One is for a $60 pledge, and one is for a $75 pledge. We also have the Naked Republicans by Shelley Lewis.
Which we'll hear more about in actually the next segment of the program, I believe.
No, that's this segment. We have another one coming up, but
they're all over the place.
We have lots of stuff. We have lots of stuff here. We have tickets. We have evenings out, meals. There's a phone. There's a phone ringing.
503-232-8818.
Outside the metro area, 1-877-500-5266 or www.kboo.fm.
Knock, knock.
Oh,
knock,
yes.
Knock, yes.
Do you
there?
Think music is soothing when people are calling in 232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO?
I think music is usually soothing.
Okay. We could play marching music, to march around.
That's not so soothing.
March over to the phone music or something. John Philip Sousa or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Or that Monty Python.
That's one of my favorite marches, yes. 503-232-8818. Name your favorite march when you call. We really do want your support in here. We can do it painlessly, electronically, monthly. I do encourage people to give, if you can possibly figure this out, 1 hour's wage every month to KBOO. You can think about it as you're working this, the first hour every month could be your KBOO hour. If you are making $11 an hour, think about giving $11 a month to KBOO. That's $132 by the end of the year, and I bet you'll hardly notice it going. I know that for myself, I've been giving in that way for quite a while now, and I'm not somebody that lives large or has a real lush lifestyle, but I really don't notice notice just that money leaving my account and going to KABU to support my entire community. Won't you do something that supports your entire community right now, today, as we start News and Public Affairs Day, going till 9 o'clock tonight, bringing you news and information, 503-232-8818.
Ani, Pear, all the wonderful volunteers, thank you. Thank everyone who called with a pledge. And you can continue to call 232-8818. And if you're outside Portland and all the wonderful places around this region that are part of the KABU community, it's 877-500-KABU. I want to thank also the We Moon Collective for providing this wonderful thank you gift to listeners who call in with either a $60 pledge or a $75 pledge. It's an awesome treat for us to be connected to this crowd. And also, keep in mind, these are great holiday gifts. They really are. Okay, I'm going to bring down the music now and let you know what my next pre-recorded interview is. This is a woman whose name is Shelley Lewis. The book is titled Naked Republicans, and don't focus on that too much in a literal way. This is really an exposure of a lot of people in the Congress. It's a wonderfully humorous book, page or two or three, about lots and lots of the names that you keep hearing about and the duplicitousness between what they say and who they are, which kind of dovetails with a new book that's come out. It's going to come out this coming week, and the title escapes me, but it's an expose of how the administration has used the evangelical community, and the evangelical community is not happy about that. And Shelley kind of starts the prelude to that thinking with helping us understand who these people are and what naughty things they've been up to. So let's go to Shelley Lewis. Okay. My guest is Shelley Lewis. She's the author of Naked Republicans, subtitled A Full Frontal Exposure of Right-Wing Hypocrisy and Greed. Hey, Shelley.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to say a few nice things about you and let our listeners know who you are, and then perhaps do a little question and answer format with you.
Well, take as much time as you need to say nice things, by all means.
Okay, and you just continue working on breathing through a cold.
Exactly.
Yeah, and thanks for being with us, even with that head cold. I know that can be a miserable time. Anyway, Shelley Lewis, author of Naked Republicans, has written a gift of a book that will keep on giving for those who think and will quite possibly awaken those who intend to remain ignorant among us. Naked Republicans takes us through the ironic twists of true crime and right-wing moralizing in a comprehensive yet humorous and compact format. While we regularly hear about bribery and corruption, how many of us have heard about pumpkin shootings or cat murder? And while the latest sex scandal has thrown the Republican Party into a dangerous slide, what about the ongoing abuses of too many obnoxious old men in this particular Congress? Shelley Lewis has a track record for this kind of book. She's a veteran TV news producer who also co-created Air America. She knows the players, and she knows K Street. It is a distinct pleasure and a privilege to once again welcome her to KABU's Electronic Salon. Shelley?
Hello. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. Shelley, first question, what sort of prompted you to write this book?
Well, actually, I was watching Newt Gingrich. Did you hear that click on
That's all right. Just go ahead.
All right. Actually, I was watching Newt Gingrich. And he was wringing his hands about the horrors of the K Street corruption, and you know, saying you can't have a corrupt lobbyist without a corrupt Congress. And it's as if it occurred to me that he wanted us to believe that he had nothing to do with the K Street project, when in fact he was instrumental in the creation of it. And what it is basically is it was a system by which Republicans would have to lobbyists would have to hire Republicans to fill their job openings. They met regularly with the Republican Party, and if you didn't hire a Republican, who is usually a former congressional staffer, for your lobby, you ran the risk of being punished when it came time to vote on legislation. Gingrich and Tom DeLay were both involved and both admonished for doing exactly that with an electronics industry lobby, which had the temerity to hire a Democrat instead of their hand-picked guy.
Uh-huh. And so in the background, I just want to let our listeners know this is New York City where we're talking. And
does it sound like we're on the set of NYPD Blue or something?
It's very exciting. It's like live TV.
But you know, and I live on in a very quiet neighborhood. I'm doing the best I can. Sorry.
You're doing just fine. That's fine. You did work in TV news as a producer. When in your experience did that little world convert to what we now know has become a complete failure to even air the concerns of liberals and progressives in any meaningful way? And that particularly goes for the Democrats in the Senate and the House of Representatives, who are really never, almost never, allowed to get out and publicly raise their concerns, much less have their hearings.
I don't know if they're really never allowed to. I think that everybody truly was knocked off their feet after 9/11 by the, and I don't, yeah, okay. I mean, obviously, I don't mean that figuratively. I mean that we were all sort of unclear of how to proceed and what to do and how much how hard one could question the administration at first. Everybody was so dazed and upset. But I think that extended way too long. It extended all the way into the whole pre-war run-up when the media absolutely was not doing the job of journalism, which is truth-seeking, after all. It's not worrying about whether the question you ask is going to brand you as unpatriotic. But I know a lot of people who felt pressured by the companies they worked for not to put too many people on the air who were too unquestioning. And it got to be, for me, an incredibly frustrating experience, so that when the opportunity came along to launch Air America Radio, I felt that was really trying to, you know, rebalance the dialogue rather than, you know, it wasn't a question of tilting it to the left. It was trying to create a place where hard questions could be asked that were fair.
Mm-hmm. What did it take to actually get something like Air America Radio off the ground?
What did it take in terms of...
Well, there was certainly money and there were certainly lots of meetings, but what kind of actors had to come together to actually make it work?
Well, you know what? The fact that Al Franken was interested made a huge difference, gave us a lot of credibility. The fact that Janine Garofalo was interested, those were the kinds of people who attracted a lot of interest from the liberal communities, I guess, and made it seem as though, well, if you can get them, you know how it is. If you can get them and you can get great people to be executives and, then we didn't have any trouble getting people who wanted to be on the air. There were, you know, we had many, many, many more people who were terrific than we could actually put on the air. And also in terms of... producers and other people. I mean, I hired a staff in a matter of something like 6 weeks. We went from, you know, Liz Winstead and me and a few executives to a full staff.
Okay, that sort of helps. The problem with the media is ongoing, and it's, you know, the comedians obviously bring it up quite a bit. For me, as a huge ingester, I guess, of media and politics, it just always occurs to me when I'm watching the major networks or the cable shows that I very rarely hear reasoned debate. For example, the John Conyers hearings, which were held in a basement.
Right.
I mean, I didn't even hear John Conyers on any of those networks or any of those cable shows really talking about what those hearings were all about. That's the kind of thing that really sort of is bothersome this long after 9/11.
No, I completely agree with you. It went on way too long, and it became kind of a habit, and it was inexcusable, in my opinion. I'm not disagreeing with you about that at all.
I understand.
And, you know, thank goodness for Randy Rhodes, who gave John Conyers a lot of time, and, you know, Air America, and I'm sure Amy Goodman, and there were some who were giving attention to those hearings, but not nearly enough. I couldn't agree more.
Right. I want to remind our listeners, you are Shelley Lewis. The book is called Naked Republicans. Shelley, you've divided your book into four parts. I'm wondering if you'll tell our listeners what they are, why you chose each section, and then take a look at some of the who's in each category.
Okay. The book is divided. It's the weasels, wackos, and warmongers, and then there's the Hall of Shame. The Hall of Shame is really the people who have that left the playing field and are, you know, retired, but cannot be forgotten and should not be forgotten, and they reach their own place of honor. The Wackos include the people who are interested in creating, you know, more or less a theocracy for our government. There are people who are bullies. The bullies pulpit includes Congressman Bill Thomas, who's now retiring, Jim Sensenbrenner, and Ted Stevens, who's renowned, of course, for his tantrums on the Senate floor. Mm-hmm. The weasels are people who lie. We have Condoleezza Rice and Bill Frist and Catherine Harris, and the family values hypocrites who are in a chapter called Governmental Affairs Committee. And then there are the people who were, some of the people, we couldn't include everybody, caught up in the Abramoff and, scandal and the lobbying scandal. Among the warmongers, you have the make money, not love guys, and that includes Dick Cheney and Duncan Hunter of California, and of course Duke Cunningham, and the Chicken Hawks. And we all, I think everybody's familiar with the term, and we know who some of them are, and we know how few of the people who sent our young men and women to war this time ever served any time themselves. But there are some surprising facts, I think, about some of the Chicken Hawks, why they didn't go, what they said about it. And, you know, honestly, the book is meant to be funny, and I promise you that it will make you laugh a lot, even though we're having kind of a serious conversation. But there are things about it that if you didn't laugh, I think your head would explode. The Hall of Shame is really just, pretty much for fun. It's done like the Baseball Hall of Shame, with the men and the women have a league of their own.
The book is funny. Each one of these actors involved in these hideous events in the Congress and the administration is detailed in a couple of pages that are really funny but packed full of information. As I was reading it, I thought to myself, this would be a really good gift to give to people who are friends or family who either are on the inside and understand it, or on the outside and don't get it.
Well, I mean, thanks. This book would... I think so too. It's kind of a fun. It's kind of a voter's guide. As, yeah. You know, I was saying about Gingrich. I really think that many of the Republicans thought that we, the American voters, were not going to understand what happened with Jack Abramoff, right, and not really care that much. And it's ironic that it's a sex scandal that's really got everybody's attention, mm-hmm, because everybody gets that. You know, and this book, mostly it's people running for office. I had to filter because Lord knows there were many, many, many people who could have been included, but mostly we kept it to people who are running for office, running for re-election.
It's interesting that Newt Gingrich's name comes up. His contract on America and his revolution in 1994, which really cost Bill Clinton a working Congress, basically brought in the people who are pretty much the subjects of your book.
That's right. There are a lot of the class of 94 who, and it's funny because when you look at the people who came in, you know, some of them were congressmen who went on to be in the Senate, others are still in the Congress. They were, you know, they were gunning for Jim Wright, and they, mm-hmm, were gunning for the House banking scandal, which was basically people bouncing checks.
Right.
You know, nobody died. It wasn't such a big, serious thing. I mean, there are always going to be sex scandals, I suppose, in Washington, but the hypocrisy of these family values Republicans who, you know, who are like out of a Guys Gone Wild video once, mm-hmm, they get to Washington. The one who's got my attention right now is Don Sherwood,
because
who's in the book. Don Sherwood is a Pennsylvania congressman who went to Congress, strictly family values guy, voted, of course, for the Defense of Marriage Act, a lot of anti-gay, every anti-gay bill he ever saw, I'm sure he voted for. But he had an affair almost immediately, started an affair with a woman who was half his age, the age of one of his daughters, I think. And this affair went on for years, and it ended up that one day she called the police, called 911, and accused him of assaulting her. He at first denied everything, then said, well, yes, we did have an affair, but I never touched her, never hit her. And it's become a big issue back home for him, a big deal. he's running against a Democrat named Chris Carney, who has been running commercials with Republicans saying Don Sherwood does not represent family values. We're not voting for Don Sherwood. And it may cost him, this one may cost him his seat because he's 8 or 9 points behind. Now, the Republicans have sent in most of their big guns, including Dick Cheney was there, John Boehner was there. Bush is still scheduled to be there, although Denny Hastert just canceled. But that's going to be a very interesting case for the so-called values voters block, I think.
Well, the sex question is always interesting. And in this particular Congress, this Gingrich crowd that came in 94, the Mark Foley episode, of course, speaks to this moment in time. When I looked Mark Foley up in the Almanac of American Politics on the first day that the story broke, I was kind of surprised to see what I read. This is a community college dropout who opened a restaurant in West Palm called the Lettuce Patch, got into real estate, hung around with some Democratic political insiders, and then eventually shifted over to the Republican Party. And so those kinds of issues are sitting there. But this was not the kind of substantive statesman-like character that I could imagine getting into the U.S. Congress. Now, that doesn't mean ordinary people shouldn't be in the Congress. But on the other hand, when I started flipping through the book and looking at lots of other people, these are not dissimilar stories. It's almost as though anybody who had enough money to get involved and stand on a line and shake hands with the right people became a candidate for Congress.
Well, you know, a lot of it is about, I think that's right, and I think that if you're looking for statesmen or women in the House of Representatives, you know, you're going to have to luck a long, hard time. And frankly, in the Senate, too. And that was, I mean, I just couldn't believe the things that I was learning, all of which were in the public record about the people like the senators from Oklahoma, or Conrad Burns of Montana, who's, you know, up to his cowboy hat in Abramoff scandals, but really has said some outrageous things over the years, and is probably may very well lose his seat this time. I hope he does. But you find out just that not only are these guys not sort of more impressive than the average person that you know, but they're probably less.
Mm-hmm. We did mention pumpkin shooting and cat murder.
Well, yes, and probably needs a little explanation.
Because our listeners will want to know about these two events.
Well, Dan Burton was Dan Burton, and this is, again, you know, remember what you can know about these guys if you're hesitating. Dan Burton in the late 90s was obsessed with the Clintons. He had a Travis Bickle-like obsession with Bill Clinton and issued hundreds of subpoenas looking for something. And one of the things that he was obsessed about was whether Vince Foster, who had been, you know, a counsel to the to Hillary Clinton and a friend for years, whether he was murdered or committed suicide, as the police reported had happened. And a very sad story, obviously. And he, to try to prove his case, it somehow took a pumpkin or a melon. Actually, we're not entirely sure. And shot it in his backyard. Didn't prove much, but that was that. As far as kitty killing, Bill Frist has admitted that when he was in college, in medical school, that he adopted some cats and from shelters and dissected them for science.
You know, there's another story about Bill Frist that didn't get much play, and that is that Healthcare Corporation of America, his family business, was sold to a private investor. This is a private investor group. This is the first time that this has been done, and they made $30 billion on the sale.
Right, and I don't know when they're going to finish the SEC investigation of that, but he denies, of course, that there was any kind of insider trading, or that he dumped
a lot of
stock,
yeah,
that he said was in a blind trust, except that he knew to dump it, so I don't, maybe it was a nearsighted
trust. Well, whether he's in a blind trust or not, that's a family holding. He's going to profit from a $30 billion sale.
That's also true, yeah. No, I mean Frist is...
dirty.
Yeah, Frist is dirty. He earns his place in the weasel category, I believe.
Yep. One of the things that strikes me when I read your book, Naked Republicans, and we are talking to Shelley Lewis, the author of the book, for the most part, this group of people in the Congress and in the White House, of course, these are ahistorical people who are extremely literal in their interpretation of the world. And when I think about the kind of dark side, the shadow side that, you know, we talk about in depth psychology, that's where all this crazy sexuality and all this bizarre behavior is coming from. But these people are living on a real fine edge of absolute literalism with no sense of history, huh?
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of these people believe that God created the world in six days,
yeah.
You know. So if they believed in the Bible literally, why would you think differently?
Yeah.
Although many of them are really quite radical when it comes to the Constitution and are not protectors of the Constitution
right. At
all, as we've seen in this last Congress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I talk in Naked Republicans a couple of times about senators and congressmen who are supporting the what's called the Constitution Restoration Act, but in fact couldn't be less of a restoration. It's a destruction of the Constitution, which is meant to keep the judiciary away from municipalities and local governments that want to put more religion into the local government. And
mm-hmm.
It includes a provision that says you can't challenge this in court. The courts have no jurisdiction here, which, I don't know, call me old-fashioned, but I thought we had three branches of government.
We did.
Yeah, we did.
We did, yeah, past tense. We have an election coming up in less than a month now. The polls are sort of shifting in unusual and curious ways. The Senate now looks like the Democrats may be able to take it, and the House looks like we may get more than 15 seats. At the same time, James Baker is running around with some new book that suddenly popped up, and he's part of a group of half Dems, half Republicans who are looking at options for the president in Iraq, which may be a cover. But I heard this morning, I think it was on Air America, there are military personnel who are already talking about being in the Persian Gulf and preparing in maneuvers in ways that look like an invasion of Iran may be imminent. And then suddenly, you know, a week after the Foley story, we hear that North Korea may be dinking around with some kind of nuclear testing. And, of course, this morning, the British press came out with the story that Donald Rumsfeld was involved in a company that he was part of, although in a blind trust, was involved in the sale of heavy water equipment, which is useful for nuclear technology.
Wow.
And here, and this was just a couple years ago, maybe. I don't have the exact time frame. But, you know, here we are now looking at North Korea, and I wonder how much of this is subterfuge to distract attention because, you know, now it's all war talk on CNN. And then we have the question of the black boxes, and I just wondered what you thought about the possibilities for November's election.
Well, you mean that's which possibility?
Well, they're playing
the black box, the voter irregularities.
I'm looking at sort of a global perspective right now. We've had the Foley event. We've had the distraction
right.
with a lot of war talk in North Korea now and Iran. There's a lot of problems still with black boxes. We're hearing that the Democrats could do better everywhere. But given this attempt to distract the public with these war stories, I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about what might happen in November.
Have we
had our October surprise, for example?
Yeah. I think it kind of backfired on the Republicans. I don't know. I believe I suspect that if the White House, if Karl Rove had a surprise, he would not be sitting on it now. He would have thrown it down
mm-hmm.
In the wake of the Foley scandal. But what do I know about Karl Rove? you know, it's hard to predict. I don't like to predict. It looks, you have to sort of look at the polls that say that two-thirds of America thinks that the country's going in the wrong direction. A majority thinks the war was a bad idea. They think that the president lied or exaggerated. All those things are true. But then when you get down to their individual races, a lot of times people think, well, my person, my
mm-hmm.
congressperson is okay. And so I don't think, you know, even you can say it's a national election, but who knows? I remember how 94 went, and it came as something of a surprise, but I don't know. I'm trying to be sort of cautiously optimistic because there are huge possibilities for voter irregularities,
yes.
Not just from, you know, the black box computers, but also there are a number of states where there, and Ohio is one where there are onerous and probably illegal, you know, voter requirements
mm-hmm.
that are meant to suppress the, exactly the votes that the Republicans want to suppress. So, you know, that's the part that I can't make that funny. That's that is tragic and horrifying, yeah. and I'm just hoping that it doesn't happen this time.
That's a major variable in this equation.
It is. It is.
And one of the things that people need to remember is not to back off from voting, but if you're a progressive and a liberal, you want to get more people to vote
Absolutely.
On your side, because the more voters that we get on our side, the better likelihood that we could overdrive some of this mischief that's going on within the system.
Well, right. They say it's a lot harder to steal a landslide.
Yeah.
I hope that's true.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would like to be able to sort of laugh but know the truth at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I wrote Naked Republicans, frankly.
Right. Well, Shelley, we have to wrap this up, and you need to get back under the covers with your tea. You've done really well with your head cold, and
well, thank you.
Very much appreciating
your time.
Thank
you for bearing with me. I just want to say that if you want to have some fun, that if you go to the website, nakedrepublicansthebook.com, you
oh,
can
good.
Test your own Naked Republicans IQ.
Mm-hmm.
And I promise you'll find surprises, and it'll make you laugh.
The cover is also wonderful.
Well, I wish I could say I drew it, but thank you. I think it's great. The artist who did it is terrific.
Yeah, they'll have to get the book to see what we're talking about. Shelley, we're in Pledge Drive here at KABU. We're a totally community radio, non-commercial, listener-supported. We are in Pledge Drive. That means we go out to our listeners twice a year to raise a few dollars to keep this little station on the air. And I wonder if you could say anything to our listeners to encourage them to support community radio.
Oh, well, you know, it's the single most important thing you can do, in my opinion, as a prelude to the next big election. As you know, as one of the people who started Air America Radio, I believe very much in the power of dialogue and the opportunity to hear a progressive point of view. And money, sadly, does not grow on trees for anybody, but the progressive side always seems to need it more. There's always seems to be more in the way of a Daddy Warbucks type on the right wing side. So I can't, and I don't know what your local issues are right now, but those affect you probably more than anything else that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a huge supporter. Started in local radio, and people dig down, buy a copy. Fortunately, it's very inexpensive. Of Naked Republicans, and then give all the rest of your extra money to the station.
Well said. Hey, Shelley Lewis, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Take care, dear. Okay, that was the voice of Shelley Lewis, author of Naked Republicans. This book is a premium for any of you listening who want to call right now at 232-8818 or 1-877-500-KABU if you're outside the Portland area. You just heard the interview. You heard the woman. It's a really interesting book. It's deep and also very witty. It's a very easy read. It'd be a great, great book for people in your family, friends, neighbors, people who either know or don't know or are on the fence. It's an awfully interesting little piece of literature. And it's a nice book to sort of carry around in your backpack because it's compact enough that you could throw it in a pocket, and then when you're on the bus or riding the trolley or waiting in line at some place, you will have this option of pulling it out of your pocket. So that's something to think about. And I think we also have some more of the Wee Moon wall calendars and desk copy date books. So those are also available. And let's go to Ani and Pear. Hello.
Well, here we are, and we have some more people to thank.
Thank you.
We want to thank Michelle, a renewing member from Salem. Bayan from Lake Oswego is a new member. Elaine is a new member from Lake Oswego. And Laura from Portland is a renewing member. Thank you, one and all. We are nibbling away at our grand goal of $2,200. We want to hear more phones ring. Like Marlena said, you can get that book, Naked Republicans, by Shelley Lewis, for a a very low pledge of $60. So that book is yours, complete with the cover that nobody will tell us what it looks like. But you can find out by giving $60 pledge to KBOO, and that book will be yours in time for Christmas, in time for the holidays, whatever holiday you want. Maybe in time for Halloween. Let's see a naked Republican on your door for Halloween. Anyway, we have. We also want to thank the restaurants that have been feeding us. We want to thank Kornblatt's Deli of 628 Northwest 23rd, Eson of 2764 Northwest Thurman, Gretchen's Kitchen at 940 Southeast Morrison, and Shea Jose at 2200 Northeast Broadway. These are people out there in the business community, the local people who feed us, and you know, we like to go there, places that are part of our vibrant community here in Portland. So thank you for your donation. So here is Ani with some sage advice. The numbers to call. What are the numbers to call?
Oh, yeah, the wisdom of the morning. Do dial 503-232.
Somebody took it already.
818. You know, when you hear wisdom, you gotta act.
That's
503-232-8818. Do move to your phone right now and dial 1-877-500-KBOO. Join Community Radio, renew your membership to KBOO. Maybe consider giving a gift membership to a friend or family member.
It's got a Republican uncle who might like a copy of The Naked Republican.
They could definitely use it. Heaven knows. 503-232-8818. As Pear was mentioning, copies of The Naked Republicans can be yours. Shelley Lewis's book, you were just hearing the interview. That's a $60 minimum pledge. $60 gets you a copy of Naked Republicans. I shudder to think. You know, we also have, as Marlena was talking about earlier, the Wee Moon calendar, the pocket calendar. Well, it's not pocket, actually. It's kind of large. But it's the spiral-bound calendar day book. It has astrological rhythms. It has beautiful art, poetry, prose. And it's yours for a $75 minimum pledge. The Wee Moon 07 Gaia Rhythms for Women, published by Mother Tongue, Inc. in Estacada. 503-232-8818. I know that people tuning into Marlena's Electronic Salon are really folks that want to get all of their information they possibly can. They suck the news dry for little niblets of information because, in fact, this is where news and public affairs junkies gather to really find out the undercurrents, the stories behind the stories, and what's going on. And to that end, I have found a few more thank you gifts that I'd love to let you know you could get for your, say, $60 minimum pledge. Left to Die. This is a DVD, and it is by Portland filmmaker, video producer, and I have to say, KBOO volunteer, Elizabeth Attlee. She has made a video, Left to Die, Causeway Concentration Camp. And that is about the survivors and how they were treated during Hurricane Katrina late last summer. Promised refuge by the government officials, these particular survivors were instead fenced in by machine gun-toting military personnel and subjected to inhumane treatment. And these are folks caught up in a natural disaster, left to die, the Causeway Concentration Camp, DVD by Elizabeth Attlee. Yours for a $60 minimum pledge. This would be the director's cut with more additional original footage, not in the other DVD version. We also have, I know Marlena likes to talk about literature and understanding the world more through literature and looking at how the arts inform the political praxis. Well, Literature from the Axis of Evil and Other Enemy Nations is a compilation of short stories and fiction, excerpts from Iran, Iraq, North Korea, Syria, Cuba, Sudan, and other countries from whom the government would rather we just not read about, hear about, or think about their perspective. If you would like to pick up a copy of that book to inform and enrich yourself, call 503-232-8818, 503-232-8818. and let us know that that is the thank you gift you want when you contribute $60 to your community radio station. There's so much to thank you with, but really you need to call now to support the community effort that brings you KABU all day long.
232-8818 outside the metro area, 1-877-500-5266 or online www.kboo.fm. Those are three ways you can get in touch with us and keep this news and public affairs and music going to you. This is we also have, not to be forgotten, we have Fighting Words by Robin Morgan. That book is available for a $60 pledge. So we have all...
I can't believe my good fortune of actually interviewing Robin Morgan this morning. She's been one of my heroes since, like, you know, since I was in high school.
She has really been around a long time and established a reputation and a name for herself.
I love her work, and here she was sharing her time with us in Portland on community radio because she knows the importance of independent media. She knows the importance of communities getting together to educate themselves and inspire each other to take right action. 503-232-8818. Look, hey, Bear, you have something to thank.
I got one more person to thank, Ken from Mount Hood, who is renewing. Now, he probably called 1-877-500-5266. That's a free phone call.
Not to be like goal obsessed or anything, but we still have almost $2,000 we need to make. It's about $1,900 that we are looking for, and you can help us reach that goal by 11 a.m. That's what we need to do, and we need you to be a part of the solution right now. Get to your phone and punch up the buttons 503-232-8818. There's another thank you gift. I'm really excited about this book. It's called Igniting a Revolution: Voices in Defense of the Earth. It's a radical environmentalist speaking out about really what's going on, how to turn things around, is it possible to turn things around, and really getting into some deep thinking in the radical environmentalist movement currently. It's a $60 minimum pledge. It has the likes of Derek Jensen, John Zerzan, and so many others.
We've had them on KABU before, haven't we?
In fact, we have.
Yes.
Connie, can I knock, knock?
You can.
Oh, good. I wanted to just let people know that I thought one of the things that was interesting in this interview with Shelley Lewis, who's a former TV news producer and who got burned out on that one, and then co-created Air America. I don't know if people were aware of it, but at the end of that segment, she actually encouraged people to pledge to KABU. And I think that's a really important point because we think all the time in competitive ways instead of understanding, as Jet Li reminds us in the movie Fearless, competition is a way of showing us our strengths and our weaknesses. It's not necessarily a fight to the finish. And what I liked about what she said was that it was an acknowledgement that there's a place for everything, and KABU is part of that and always has been here. Commercial stations are wonderful. They're a part of our community. However, commercial stations can come and go. But this community has been keeping KABU alive for 38 years by simply calling the numbers 232-8818 or 1-877-500-KABU. And as long as this community stays focused on keeping this station alive, it's going to continue to be here. We won't lose it because of large corporate interests. It's ours, and we need to keep it. And I think the other thing about KABU is the substantive quality of everything that happens here. So, for example, I was driving home from a theater performance on Sunday night, turned on KABU, and there was Rabia doing a wonderful dog and pony show followed by Women in Opera. I mean, what a gorgeous night. We've done John Lennon specials. Who else? We've done all sorts of...
Oh, we have Coltrane night.
Exactly. So we've got all these amazing things that you just simply will not hear anywhere else. It's all non-commercial, so you don't have to, you know, sift through all the ads, which are important for those entities that need them. But for us, it's you. And this is the only time, one of only two times in the year when we come to you with any breaking in our programming and ask you to please make a contribution and help this station survive. 232-8818, 1-877-500-KABU. In just a couple of minutes, we're going to go to Michael Mead, the mythologist, and talk to him about his new book. Let's see, how are we doing? We still have some phones open on
it? We have two lines open right now. And I have to say, I don't actually even consider this a break in our regular programming. I consider this actually that time that we focus on a very important aspect of our programming, which is including you, the listener, into the total mix, encouraging you to take advantage of the opportunity to take part in a grassroots movement of media democracy.
And once you become a member, you can take further advantage. You can come down, you can be on committees, you can help run the station, you can run for the board.
The advantage to being on a committee.
Yes.
I don't hear that very often.
No, well, it's very good. It's good for you.
8818. It's good for the soul. It's
have
a lot
trouble
like
sleeping? Join a committee.
It's
yes.
not like eating fiber.
But you can come on down here. Come on down here right now and visit us. We have a lot of people here. We always have a pot of coffee going. We have bagels from our bagel vault. We have all kinds of stuff, you know. See our palatial headquarters. See what you're buying for your money, because you are
That's
an owner
right.
of this station. We have a record library, which is one of the best in anywhere, because it has so much music. We don't have a little niche, you know, like golden oldies and stuff like that. We have all kinds of music, and our record library shows it. It's bursting at the seams. We need more room for all these CDs that we buy and that are given to us, and that you get to hear.
503-232-8818. Pierre's just given you a ton of good reasons to stop by if we are on your way somewhere today. Maybe even a little bit out of your way. Come on, stop by 20 Southeast 8th. You can call 503-232-8818 right now. Make your pledge. Stop by later on today. Pay your pledge in person. And meet the people that bring KBOO your direction. Meet the folks behind the mics and take a tour of the station. Learn how radio is made. Learn
and
you will
find that we are
part.
As good looking as we sound.
That's right. We all have faces for radio.
And we're back. I want to thank Ani and Pear and the folks at Pledge Central and all of you who called in. That's really helping us reach our goal. Now we're going to turn our attention to Michael Mead. Wonderful individual, wisdom, life experience, works in depth psychology with youth and who are at risk, also with elders, lectures and tours on mythology. He's going to have a workshop tomorrow at the Smile Center. And we'll have more information about that during the conversation. And that information is at the front desk if you want to call KBOO. A bit of a genius, someone I really respect, and has also given me a CD that we'll be using in this new season. So without any more conversation, let's go to Michael Mead. Push it. Okay. My guest today is Michael Mead, author of The Waters of Life, known to many here at the Electronic Salon for the CDs that Mosaic has so kindly provided. Michael, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. I want to let our listeners know a little bit about you, and then I wanted to chat up The Waters of Life and some of the work that you're doing in the workshops that are going to be happening here in Portland. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay. During the 2005-2006 season, as I indicated, the Electronic Salon utilized the wisdom of Michael Mead through a couple of CDs comprising a portion of his vast inspirational store of myth and storytelling. We listened to Fate and Destiny and Initiation in the Soul. These two CDs gave our listeners an entree into the mind of a man with radical ideas about what it means to be fully human. Now, Michael Mead is with me by phone to talk about a revision of his book, The Water of Life, subtitled Initiation and the Tempering of the Soul, from Greenfire Press, which published The Water of Life. We are told that The Water of Life addresses the connection between meaning and purpose in personal life and returning culture to its mythic context. In the preface to the book, Michael Mead describes the dual nature of global terror, or the dual nightmare of global terror and global warming. The Water of Life is a mythic journey, a study in depth psychology, and a treatise on initiation. The book addresses the roots of conflict, the recurring hunger for war, and the issues of redirecting the warrior. As well as writing and lecturing, Michael Mead works with at-risk youth and elders to help them reimagine their importance and necessity in the creation of a healthy society. It's an honor and a privilege, Michael, to be able to welcome you and to talk to you here at KBOO.
Well, thank you, Marlena.
My absolute pleasure. And thank you for writing this book. You write absolutely beautiful prose, and that part of the book is an absolute pleasure, as well as the content. So thank you for the book.
Well, thank you for the kind words.
My pleasure. Can you tell us, tell our listeners, what has informed your journey and your work?
Well, I start out kind of growing up on the streets of New York City and getting occasional tastes of the real rough side of life, and have continued to pay attention to that. And so one of the things I learned in that is that it's when in trouble that we find out who we are,
mm-hmm.
and that if we can get into the right kind of trouble, it turns out to be initiatory. Initiation being a fancy word for necessary self-revelation. And so I've taken that kind of idea based in my own experience and used it to work with at-risk youth, refugees from Sudan, and various kinds of people, trying to get involved when someone's really in trouble in order to help turn it from a disaster to this kind of deepening revelation.
Mm-hmm. Your work focuses a lot on storytelling and myth from across the globe and across time, really. How do these stories help us at this time in history?
Well, one of the problems with being alive right now is that we are out of the story, that we're in a kind of a gap. And the major stories that, in some sense, were holding cultures together and even feeding religious ideas now are almost having the opposite effect. So that instead of being a story that inspires and encourages and shows people how to go, the major stories have become rigidified, and they have become the sources of fundamentalist fixations. And so they're not giving people as much an inspiration, I don't think, or a sense of where to go as much as they're entrapping people in things that maybe are trying to die in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Often I say, mythically speaking, we're living at a mythic turning point. We're living at the end of an era, which people keep thinking is going to lead to a big explosion apocalyptically.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, I call it the slow apocalypse. It's really a slow collapsing and draining of institutions and cultural ideas. But mythically speaking, the world cannot end. That's not the thing to be afraid of. Global warming is something that needs to be dealt with, you know, the sooner the better. And global terror is really the accumulation of inner terror in many, many people, and that needs to be dealt with. But neither one of them is going to end the world. Mythically speaking, the world comes to almost an end and then starts up again like a story.
And that shows up across time and space. In
yes.
myth. Interesting, because a lot of us who are into astrology and mythology, etc., look at the Mayan prophecy for, 2012?
Right.
And see a lot of planets lining up at 0 degrees in 2008. And, in fact, we just had a chat about that here at the station, wondering if that alignment of 0 degree outer planets is a prelude to 2012, and what does that mean?
Well, here's the way. There are actually probably as many as 20-some-odd major prophecies about the end of the world sometime occurring between 2008 and 2021 or something. And I tell a lot of what I call folk myths. They're smaller stories that are not part of any of the big civilizations. And I think what tends to happen is the big civilizations and the ideas behind them do come to an end. They do come to a conclusion, like the feudal system or even the Aztec world to a certain degree. But right nearby are these folk myths that don't come to an end, that continue on. The word end actually can never end. It really means loose end or tail end or residue. And there's always a residue left from lives that have been lived. And from that residue, the world starts again. And so that's the part of it that I tend to focus on, that, yes, some major things are going to come to an end, but the cosmos itself continues to breathe out more life, and from that, what we call the world continues.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate your taking time on this sort of sidebar, because the nature of the world right now is such that people really do begin to ponder these kinds of big head questions. And I thought putting it in some context with you might be helpful. The current occupants of the White House, speaking about crazy times, would have us believe that the warrior serves the interest of the king. Now, in your book, The Water of Life, you talk about the reducing the warrior problem, and I'm wondering if you can help us understand what is going on. What is this sense of reducing the warrior? How is the warrior being abused, and what is a warrior?
Well, there's lots of ways to go at it. From a psychological point of view, the warrior is an archetype like the lover, and so it's going to be around. It's not going to go away, and it has two major capacities. One is to set boundaries and protect them. That's the energy in it. And the other energy is to serve something transcendent. Now, what the White House doesn't know, and most leaders nowadays do not know, that is that the word king means sacrifice. That the job of someone who becomes king or queen is to sacrifice for the benefit of the community, for the benefit of everybody. And so when you look at it that way, the warrior energy is there to serve those that sacrifice for the benefit of others. That would be the healthy way to see it. In the modern world, instead of warriors, which is a complicated psychological and mythical condition to be in, you have soldiers. Warriors do not simply obey because they are there to serve something that transcends the obvious. Soldiers wind up having to obey even a completely failed policy like the current Iraq policy. They basically get trapped in the limits of obedience rather than in the transcendence of service. And then a very key thing that has happened in modern warfare is that the soldiers, having been immersed in the hell of war, where they are really exposed to an underworld initiation, are returned without any real treatment back into the streets of the culture. And this is happening from Iraq right now. I work with soldiers coming back from Iraq, and they are, generally speaking, worse off than the ones that came back from Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And traditionally and mythically, you would not return anyone who has been in battle back into the common areas until you reduce the warrior capacity in them, and you do that through... usually they do it through a series of rituals that involve water, that is to say cleansing and washing away all the fervor of the battle. And then the other side of it involves milk, that is to say returning the ones who have gone a little berserk, hopefully to protect the community, returning them to the relationship of a child to its mother, back into the milk of nurture and the milk of community. When that doesn't happen, then the warrior energy keeps reverberating through the culture, as happened after Vietnam and is intensely happening right now in the country with those coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, because I also work in the field of mental health, and one of the things that I'm observing with the people who are coming back is that there are some extremely fixed patterns starting to show up that people can't shake, and they're also not able to function, and the readmission rate is really high of these people. So it is scary, and this is just the beginning of a trickle of people. One of the stories I just heard this week on the news was that because recruitment levels were down last year, this year, instead of only 2% people who couldn't meet the test standard, etc., they've raised it to 4%. So they're taking people with mental health and physical problems, as well as inability to satisfy a test score. And that makes me question, what is their real motive? Are they just really looking for bodies to send far away?
Well, I'm afraid they are doing that. And at the same time, they're covering up the bodies that are coming back in coffins.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a kind of dual cover-up, and, this is another problem.
Mm-hmm.
When those who die in battle are brought back to the village, would be the mm-hmm. way it used to be, or back to the community, then that puts everybody, that shifts the ground of everybody's relationship to what's going on, and it opens the doors of grief, and it opens a kind of awareness of the presence of death, and it causes people to have more gravitas, more weighted capacity for deliberating things.
Yes.
Because no one is getting to see the dead, which, you know, they keep giving the count, it's getting up around 3,000, but that's just the rack. They don't even include Afghanistan in the count. So on and so forth. And, of course, they never include the Iraqi civilians who are paying the heaviest price. But when people don't get to see the deceased coming back, it's taking the funeral out of the war. And that is really dangerous in many, many regards. It leaves the families whose children are dying really isolated, and it also stops what is a more natural process, that is to say, after the battle, grief is supposed to come and wash clean the excesses of the battle.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not getting that in the culture at all. And in a certain way, it's crazy-making for everybody.
There are two other points that sort of come to mind with this, and I appreciate your taking time, because people don't normally talk about what's going on in this context, and I really value your insights. First of all, this stop-loss program that the military has in place, some of these guys are on second, third rotation. They're completely overwhelmed, and we always hear them say, you know, I would rather be here. I can't go back to the States. I want to help my buddies, which tells me psychologically that they're in massive denial, that they can't re-enter civilian life. The only thing they understand is the combat zone now and each other. And the second part of that question is, what about the families who unknowingly, unwittingly, or in a very, you know, kind of superficial, patriotic way, think that this is the right thing to do? What is motivating that piece that is supporting this administration in these things like stop loss?
Well, the first part of it, I wouldn't put too much of the weight on denial. What happens, I was working with a young vet who came back, and one of the things that happened is he couldn't relate to any of his friends. His friends are saying stuff, you know, he's still young, he's like 21. And his friends are saying, well, have you heard the latest record? And he can't actually hear them. It makes no sense to him what they're talking about. And he's trying to say to them, you know, are you aware of the nearness of hell? Are you aware of the immediacy of death? Do you know how precious life is, but also how quickly it can be snuffed out? And then in the depth of the conversation, he also says, do you know what it's like to have blood of innocent people on your hands? So he actually almost can't find anyone to talk to. So one of the things that I did other than talk with him and meet with him was invite him to work with gang-involved youth, because it resonates. He actually, through that, found a way to not re-up and go back in. He kind of took his painful experiences in Iraq and now has turned them to working with kids who are caught in the battle of the streets. And that's the problem when it's women and men coming back. The daily world does not seem real to them because they have not closed their experience of being in an other and what I call underworld condition. So that's that one part of that. And let's see, the other question, I'm now following that with my imagination. The other part of the question had something to do with...
I'm sorry to have lumped so much together, but the second part of that was, we have these people who go and come back, and I like what you describe as a way of really mentoring, using the pain to mentor some other group that has a parallel situation. The second part of this is, not only do these soldiers, men and women, go, but there are families who send them in grief, and there are families who send them thinking that this is the right thing to do. And then when all of these situations happen and we keep seeing these families on the news, et cetera, it makes me wonder, who are these people? What is in them that allows their family members to go to do this, besides the absence of adequate information? But what is the whole family thing about? And then these people come back, or the bodies come back. What about the families?
Well, there's a lot of stuff in there. When I was drafted when I was 20, to go to Vietnam, and I was quite shocked when I talked to everyone in my family, including my mother, my uncles, my father, and said, you know, this doesn't look like a real war to me. It's not declared. No one seems to know what it's about. And, you know, do I have to actually go do this? And they all said yes. And I said, well, why? And they said, well, we always do this. You know, we're poor Irish people. We always just serve. And, you know, so I was shocked by that. And I think that's one element of it. In other words, people often families don't have a really deep sense of their own worth and value. So they substitute what would be deeply, uniquely personal about that family. They substitute for that patriotism, the idea that your value comes by serving obediently, in this case, the general good. And once that move is made, often the capacity to be discreet and understand whether this is for the general good or not, that capacity diminishes. People can't, once they make the move that some sacrifice is going to be made or some offering on the part of the family, they lose the capacity to discriminate whether this is actually for the good or not. That's where I wound up when I was 20 years of age, and I wound up in jail because I decided, you know, this cannot be what my life is about. This mm-hmm. cannot be the sum value of my life. And when I decided to make a stand upon that, I found myself actually with no support from my family and eventually being locked up.
So was this one of those transitional moments in your life that changed your path forever?
Totally.
Yeah.
That turned out to be initiatory.
Right.
And I write about it in the book because it wound up being not the underworld initiation of the Vietnam War, but the underworld initiation of being locked up in prison. And then turned out I wasn't really a good prisoner either. And so I wound up in solitary confinement.
Oh, dear.
And when I came out of that eventually, that's when I realized there's a whole piece missing in my education. And that led me to studying initiation, because that's the only way I could understand what had happened mm-hmm. to me, how I wound up in such an isolated, painful place, but how I came out of it more myself by far than when I went in.
What tools did you use to study initiation? I know you've talked about astrology in your tapes. You collected myth and story. How did you know where to go for initiation understanding?
Well, I studied anthropology, and I knew that. Well, I'd also grown up in street gangs, so I knew that there was this informal style of initiation which continues in this culture to this day. And I don't know if I heard something or I guessed that there must be a more formal process. And so I studied tribal initiations of different kinds of cultures, and then actually had the good fortune to begin working with people from Africa, some of whom had gone through some of the last traditional initiations in Africa, because most of that stuff has been interrupted now,
mm-hmm.
and eventually worked with lots of people from different cultures who carried immediate knowledge of these initiations. And so the book, The Water of Life, is largely about how a person figures out from their own life experience what initiated them and what makes them who they are, because the fact that we lose formal processes doesn't take away the archetypal presence of the expectation and need for initiation. For instance, when a young woman typically, or a woman, gives birth to her first child, that has always been considered initiatory, not just biological, not just even psychological, but a deeply initiatory thing. And often women don't get the full benefit of going, realizing they have become a different person because they went through that. And so there's a whole missing piece in culture. And why it's important is when people become leaders and handle a lot of power but are not initiated into an essential and real knowledge of their own life, they are terribly dangerous. And, of course, I'm talking about George Bush. When I remember someone asking me, how in the world could he get elected a second time? And the only answer I could give was, people who don't know who they are elect people who will never know who they are. Initiation is the formal and informal process through which a person learns who they are to be in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone has power and really doesn't know who they are by definition dangerous.
You may be aware there's a book by a psychologist, Justin Frank, called Bush on the Couch, which if you haven't read, I totally recommend.
All right.
I've interviewed him a number of times, and his central point is that this is a child who at the age of 6 or 7 lost his second-in-line sibling, a female, to leukemia. The parents took the child to New York City, I guess. The child died. The parents went to play golf the next day, came home, and never talked about it with George. The psychiatrist locates George's problem at that point in time. That's the moment in his explanation as a person emotionally, Bush is 7 years old.
Well, I can, I will read that.
Yeah.
That sounds good. And one of the things about informal initiation, that is to say, not one that's planned by the community, but it just happens.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever a loved one dies or there's an death interrupts the course of life, it is an initiatory moment. And two things can happen. Either a person gets to then go deeper into their own life and form a deeper connection to this world, or the opposite happens. A person regresses and forms a less genuine relationship to the world. And so you can imagine what happened to young George when his own experience of the immediacy of death was turned into golf and dissociation.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And that's what he's doing right now, obviously. Anybody could figure that out.
And substance abuse for self-medication.
And then notice no one gets to see the bodies.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
And so there is some kind of repetition.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's a really good point.
I'll read that book because it's clear that something's wrong and that it's not just the one person. I think also those that we elect often reflect our own shadows, as they say, that when not well informed or not on a right track or a good track, the elections tend to elect the shadow of the culture rather than, you know, the kind of genius of the culture.
In terms of Jungian analysis, because you're getting into shadow talk here, the anima of this person, George Bush, for example, or these warrior guys, these ersatz warrior guys, how would you describe or define that?
Well, if you take Jung's idea of the feminine part of the male psyche, you're going to have it, as you already kind of said, perhaps frozen in childhood states, that it's more, it hasn't developed. There's been a lack of emotional development. You can, when I was in, I wound up, before I went to jail, I went into the Army because I couldn't figure out what else to do. And that's one of the things that I encountered. You know, some of the sergeants and all, so rigid and so hard. Not that they're all that way, because that's not the case, but some of them. And you could see, as a matter of fact, they call all the recruits ladies as if they're stuck somewhere with this distortion of the feminine that didn't grow in them. So that's one thing that can happen. And there's a way in which when you're looking at the soldier or the warrior in battle, there is a removal of the feminine quality. But I have to say that something near as I can tell has increased in modern times. For instance, in Irish myths, the battles would never be very big. That started with World War I. They used to be pretty small battles. And so the two heroes wind up fighting, from a different tribe. And they fight all day long, and they wound each other and all that stuff. But when the sun goes down and it turns dark, that's a return of eternity. And eternity comes each night to wash the world clean of all its historical and time-bound issues. And at that point, the two that have been fighting go down to the riverbank and they wash and cleanse each other and heal each other's wounds. This is in the Irish myth, but it also exists in other mythologies. The next day they start fighting again. But there is this break. There is this sense that the fighting is captured in time. It's a time-bound thing. And there is always eternity washing through. But also in there you could see that the warrior would have to have a more developed feminine side, too, if they're going to attend to healing in a certain sense. Mm-hmm. And the Irish proverb is, you don't give a man a weapon until you've taught him how to dance.
Mm-hmm.
So that culturally, you raise particularly your boys to the point where they understand the dance of the world before you give them weapons. And, of course, that isn't what is happening now.
I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to the voice of Michael Mead, author of The Water of Life. Many of you have heard a good deal of his wisdom on CDs that have been played on the Electronic Salon. We're talking about myth and storytelling and ways of reimagining, because one of the points you make, Michael, in the book The Water of Life is that we have lost imagination.
Yeah.
We're getting close to the end of the amount of time that you have available, and I want to be respectful of that. I just one other quick question. You distinguish global war on terror from the terror of global war in your book, The Water of Life. What's the psychic or psychological impact of what's going on globally?
Well, one of the things I was trying to point out is that what's happening, it really can't even be called war. The original meaning of war actually is to steal the other people's cattle. In other words, there's a limit to what causes people to go to war. Vengeance is a completely different thing, revenge and vengeance, which actually has to do with the Furies and which has to do with not understanding where or how to make a place for fury. But that's maybe a different subject. So what's happening, and you can tell when you're working with these young people coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, what's happening is not really like war. It's they are caught in the terror. The terror isn't just what happens when, the fundamentalist or whatever you want to call that group attack during 9/11. The response is also part of the terror. The terror is actually the fact that people, as well as the sense of what the world is about, is the victim or almost being annihilated by more than one side in the thing. As you could see with Hezbollah and Israel recently, there's just utter annihilation and destruction of human life and cultural shapes. And that is not the nature of war. War is like a battle over boundaries and cattle. It was the old image. And this is something else. This is closer to the end of stories, people's incapacity to believe that we're in a living story. It really is apocalyptic in its terrifying qualities, but I think it's important to know that apocalyptic doesn't mean the very end. Actually, the word is an old Greek word, and it means to lift the veil. And so we're living in a time where the veils lift. And you can see inside the Catholic Church, and you see the abuse of children. You can see inside the administration, and you see a whole, arrangement of lies. You can see inside all the institutions a hollowness, a loss. That's how I see it anyway, the lifting of the veil. And that's why I keep reminding everybody the tail end of other stories are always available. And the job of a person, well, there's an old idea that says the human soul picks when it wants to be born. And so that, if you look at it that way, each of us came here because we have something to give at this time. And I think that's the proper reaction to this overall terrorizing of the world, is the more a person can live the life that their soul came here to live, the more fully do we respond to the terrorizing conditions. And it's very hard to be terrorized if you're doing what your soul came here to do.
Thank you for that. If we could only get them off their cell phones and get the iPods out of their ears, huh? My guest is Michael Mead. The book is The Water of Life. You know him. You've heard his CDs on my show for weeks and weeks over the past year. Michael, I want to be sure that we tell our listeners that you're going to be doing a day-long workshop Saturday, October 14th, at the Smile Station in Selwood at 8210 Southeast 13th, which is the corner of Tenino and 13th. I've left this information at the front desk so people can call KABU. Any donations to the work you do supports the Mosaic Scholarship Fund, which and Voices of Youth and other cross-cultural and intergenerational projects. And I'm going to let people know that they can call in Seattle at 800-233-6984. 800-233-6984. Again, this number will be available at the front desk at KABU, or they can email at info@mosaicvoices, mosaicvoices.org. Any final remarks, Michael?
Well, just thinking, I think it's two nights from tonight, Thursday the 12th, 7 p.m. At the Old Church.
Okay.
And I call that Poetics of Peace, imagining peace in a terrifying world.
And actually, this will broadcast Friday, so it won't be something people can do. But the Saturday event for sure will be accessible to this listener audience. Yeah, no problem. Any final remarks that you want to make in summing up any of the conversation or thoughts you want to leave people with as we move through this time?
Well, I would just say that it's going to continue to be a dark time. I think more and more people can see that now. And that the old stories say that you find the light within the dark, and that, not to be trite, but right now that's the place, best place to look. And if people would go to the darkest parts of the culture, that's where you find culture renewing and the story starting over again. We work with at-risk youth, we work with refugees, and that's the places in the culture where you find new ideas as well as hope.
Thank you. Michael, one last request. We're in Pledge Drive. This is a community station driven and owned by this community for 38 years. I wonder if you could say a few words to encourage our listeners to pledge to this show.
Well, I would say that in a time where most of the news is pretty bad, where terrifying things happen in all directions, anything that inspires and sustains community is highly valuable, and KBOO is part of that, the community of voices and the community of listening, and increasingly an important thing as the world gets more and more unraveled.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your energy. Thank you for the life you came to live, and thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Marlena. And keep up the good work.
Thank you. You too. Blessings.
Blessings back.
Bye. Bye-bye. Thanks. And that, of course, the voice of Michael Mead, author of The Water of Life, which is available if you call right now at 232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO, a very wonderful book that I've been reading. And I want to let you know, this is a pledge challenge time. We have an anonymous donor who's contributed $500 to this remaining segment, and that means that if you donate $60, it turns into $120. So that gives us a chance to raise even more money for the station. So The Water of Life is immediately available from Michael Mead, a gift from the Mosaic Foundation, and also a new CD that will be airing in this coming season. And just as a reminder, we have many other thank you gifts. John Lennon CD, Peace, Love, and Truth. Ani DeFranco live at Carnegie Hall. We have food from Hot Lips Pizza. We have a DVD CD called The Vedic Path from National Geographic Maps. City Bikes has given us thank you gifts. We have gold and diamond pendants and a sterling and gold pendant for a hefty pledge for those of you who are capable of a little more than a $60 pledge. These are reminders that people in the community are giving thank you gifts to this community radio station to honor your contribution to KBOO. And again, this is a matching pledge time, so anything you give will be double what you give. Ani, that's a pretty good deal for 232-8818 and 1-877-500-KBOO.
It's a great deal for community. It's a great deal for you, because not only do you get to become a new participating active member of this very exciting community resource, KBOO, but you also can pick up a copy of The Water of Life, The Initiation and Tempering of the Soul by Michael Mead, and your money counts double right now when you dial 503-232-8818.
People are doing it. The phones are ringing. You know, people have been challenged, and they are rising to the challenge. We have some people to thank. John and Hood River Renewing. Mark in Portland Renewing. Dan in Portland Renewing. James in Portland, a new member. Patrick in Portland, a new member. And Pamela in Portland is renewing.
They have
met the challenge. They have called 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Another ringy dingy out there.
Ah, so exciting.
Oh, come on.
It's really nice to know that people outside the immediate Portland area recognize they are part of this community. So it's real nice to hear from people in Hood River, Across the Columbia River, our signal is bouncing to Bingen, White Salmon, if you're listening there. I think some people in the Dalles can pick us up. I know Battleground does in Southwest Washington, along with a number of other communities. Longview, Kelso, wonderful little communities with lots of interesting people who are in their own way creating community in their little communities themselves and being part of this KABU community, community of people who think and are interested in substantive information and wonderful music 24/7 from a team of volunteers who are just quite remarkable when you think about it. 232-8818, 1-877-500-KABU. Again, we have 6 minutes left in this $500 matching grant. Anything you contribute will automatically be doubled. So we really appreciate any contributions that you can make. And again, The Water of Life by Michael Mead, the man you just heard, an incredible human being who's really absolutely committed on the most profound level to building community and to healing, working with at-risk youth, working with elders, and has done, as he said, a wonderful mentoring project with veterans and soldiers coming back from the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan and linking them up with kids in the street who are part of gangs because they have so much in common with the violence and the bloodshed and the terror. And these returning vets get a chance to mentor. And I'm getting chills just thinking about it.
Right on.
And these kids who are on the street who are terrified of the life they're living are working with these returning vets. And it's an incredible connection that I'm really interested in seeing if we can sort of recreate in Portland, because it's a great way for the mental health community to begin taking some of these people who are coming back with so much grief and pain, and having them work with kids who, you know, are really vulnerable. I mean, we just heard, for example, that the Pentagon lowered the standards yet again for recruitments because they didn't meet their recruitment totals last year. So they've increased the number of mentally and physically disabled individuals. They're taking people with lower test scores, which means they're really looking at fodder that they can just throw out there into this battle zone. And that's what we're working against. And when those people come back, so many wounded, so many injured, I think 1 in 5 with disabilities now, numbers that are beginning to emerge that are far beyond anything we've been told by the administration, like 6 million perhaps Iraqis dead.
600,000.
600,000, rather. And actually, I heard a number that it might be over 1 million.
Yeah.
And from a statistician who actually looked at the way they do it. And even if it's being criticized, it's the way they measure people in rallies. So you take a grid of the population that you see at like a rally, and then you multiply that by the number of grids in that spot, and that's supposed to be the way you monitor. Well, you know they always underestimate the number of people at any kind of rally, so they're probably underestimating the number of dead.
Absolutely.
The number of injured coming back is in excess of, in this country, of 30,000.
Yes.
The number dead is around 3,000 now, plus or minus.
Well, yeah, add the contractors, so-called contractors, who are kind of soldiers in civilian clothes, too.
232-8818. I think there might be some phones. If they're not, just keep calling. 1-877-500.
There is one phone open right now. 503-232-8818.
Again, it's a matching drive, so anything you contribute is going to be worth twice as much as what you contribute, and we really need your help. We've got a little less than 4 minutes to go, 56:50, so we're coming down to the three-minute mark. This is the last opportunity to take advantage of this wonderful anonymous matching grant that someone has given to inspire more pledges to the station to keep this little radio station on the air, this incredible resource where we get to talk to someone like Michael Mead for better than a half hour straight on with the incredible wisdom. And
he's an incredible person, and I know you've been playing his CDs now for a while, and I know I've been moved to tears more than once when I'm listening to him. A powerful storyteller, somebody who really gets these mythic connections and helps to illuminate the incredibly perilous times in which we find ourselves today.
And does it in a healing way.
Absolutely. Very inspirational.
Which is what community is about. When I was in graduate school, I remember a wonderful professor, Jerry Blake, who has long since left the planet. But Jerry was this wonderful human being who, in one of my first seminars, said, you know, we create community because the community in which we live is the thing that supports us. And so we give back to that community because we don't exist in a vacuum. So even though we think, you know, getting enough resources may protect us, it's really our community. And when you think about it, if there's a crisis, a flood, an earthquake, any of those things, it's your neighbors. It's the people in your community that are going to support you, cut, you know, get their chainsaws and cut down the tree blocking your driveway. Yeah. It's always about community, ultimately. And KABU is at the center of that in this region, because you know
Without KABU, this would be a very different place to live. So once again, 232-8818. It's good to hear those phones ring. And 1-877-500-KABU if you're listening in Monmouth, Philomath,
right.
Albany, Corvallis. I think people in Eugene can pick us up. I know people on the coast can get us with some rigged antennas. I know people in trucks have contacted us driving over the Cascades with special techniques for getting the signal. We've even had calls from Paris, France.
We have. And it's an amazing thing.
We've gotten
Paris, emails throughout Japan and Pakistan and London. I know we have listeners around the world. Please call and support the radio station that does all of this for the community, 503-232-8818. Want to remind people that with your $75 minimum pledge, you can get a copy of The Water of Life, Michael Mead's book. That's a $75 minimum pledge. And that $75 adds to this matching pledge to make it $150 worth of support for KABU. You support your community. You can feel good about yourself for taking right action. Here you are, first thing in your day. And then you can also thank yourself by reading this book.
30 seconds.
When we send it to you as your thank you gift. Just call 503-232-8818. Say yes to community. Say yes, I have $75. I'm willing to put it down for my community, and I'd love a copy of The Water of Life,
it's
the
a
Michael
good book.
Mead book.
We have a copy right here. Been kind of browsing through the index. That's one
I'm
way
loving
to
it.
Tell what a book is about is go through the index, see what's covered. It just looks like it's got everything in there.
Thank you both very much. Remember, any contribution will mean that we can continue listening to people like Michael Mead.
Give those numbers
thank you
one more time.
232-8818, 1-877-500-KABU. Love you all. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Stay tuned for Democracy
Thank
Now.
Thank you, Marlena.
Yes, this is KBOO in Portland, Oregon. The time is a little after 11 in the morning. And today we're going to hear the entirety of Democracy Now! Of course, it'll take about an hour and a half to air the whole thing, but we're going to hear the whole thing coming up right now.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
Once you cross that fence, once you decide to fight back, everything is different. You cannot contact anyone on the other side. That means no phone calls, no letters. You may never see your family again.
Catch a Fire, a new film, tells the story of Black South African freedom fighter Patrick Chamuso after being falsely arrested by the apartheid regime for sabotage at an oil refinery where he works. His wife is jailed and tortured. He decides to fight back. He joins the African National Congress. We'll speak with Academy Award-winning actor Tim Robbins, who co-stars in the film, and the producer of the film, Robin Slovo. She's the daughter of anti-apartheid leaders Ruth First and Joe Slovo. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. The head of the British military says foreign occupation is worsening the situation in Iraq and should come to an end. In an interview with the British newspaper The Daily Mail, General Sir Richard Dannett said, quote, "I don't say that the difficulties we're experiencing around the world are caused by our presence in Iraq, but undoubtedly our presence in Iraq exacerbates them." He adds, "We're in a Muslim country, and Muslims' views of foreigners in their country are quite clear. As a foreigner, you can be welcomed by being invited in a country, but we weren't invited certainly by those in Iraq at the time." Dannett's statement made front-page headlines around Britain. Many reports suggest his comments signify a major split between the military and Prime Minister Tony Blair. But Dannett later denied this was the case.
Comment needs to be just put in context. There are certain places where we are that we are attacked because we are there. Now, there are other places in Basra, operations going on at the present moment, called Operation Salamanca, where we're deliberately going into districts to make things better for people. We're doing reconstruction tasks and development tasks, and they appreciate that. But in other places, because we are there, we constitute a target and we are attacked. And it's in that sense that our presence exacerbates the problem.
The British general's comments come amid reports the Congressional Commission established to assess the Iraq War has ruled out the prospect of a U.S. victory. According to the New York Sun, the two main strategies considered by the Iraq Study Group both contradict President Bush's rhetorical vow to establish democracy in Iraq. In another rebuke to the administration's policies, both strategies would encourage the U.S. to hold talks with Syria and Iran. The commission's findings will not be released until after the midterm elections next month. Meanwhile, in Iraq, the Iraqi parliament has passed a law that would allow the creation of separate autonomous regions. The vote passed over the objection of Sunnis, who say it will lead to the breakup of Iraq. In a concession to Sunni concerns, the law says the regions cannot be formed for at least 18 months. A former top British official has admitted he advised Prime Minister Tony Blair to bomb the Arabic television network Al Jazeera during the opening months of the Iraq War. In an interview with Britain's Channel 4, former Home Secretary David Blunkett says he told Blair to strike Al Jazeera's transmitting equipment because it was broadcasting, quote, propaganda. Blunkett explained, quote, there wasn't a worry from me because I believed this was a war, and in a war, you wouldn't allow the broadcast to continue taking place. 2 weeks after Blunkett recommended the attack, the U.S. military bombed Al Jazeera's office in Baghdad, killing correspondent Tariq Ayoub. On Thursday, Al Jazeera editor-in-chief Ahmed Al-Sheikh said, quote, this adds to the growing number of evidence that will one day prove that the attack on Al Jazeera was premeditated at the highest levels. Al Jazeera was being targeted at the time because the people who were waging war on Iraq didn't like what it was showing. We talk about terrorism. This is pure terrorism, he said. In other news, the U.S. military has released 17 new prisoners from Guantanamo Bay. The prisoners, 16 Afghans and one Iranian, all arrived in Afghanistan Thursday. At a news conference in Kabul, the newly freed Dr. Khan Jan described his ordeal.
They were treating us like animals. They were not treating us as human beings. They were too cruel. Their behavior was not imaginable. They were punishing us very badly like animals.
Another prisoner, 20-year-old Habib Rahman, said he was tortured as recently as 4 months ago. He said, quote, they were kicking us all the time, beating us with their hands. On one occasion, Rahman said he was interrogated for 38 hours without sleep. Also speaking Thursday was freed prisoner Mohammed Nassim.
Their behavior was against Islam, against our Quran. Three Arab prisoners died during prosecution and searches. The living conditions were very bad.
The freed prisoners' comments come as a U.S. Marine sergeant has come forward with new allegations of abuse at Guantanamo. In an interview with ABC News, Marine Corps Sergeant Heather Cervini said she was told of the abuse over drinks with several of the soldiers who carried it out. Sergeant Cervini said one sailor recounted taking a prisoner by the head and smashing him into a cell door. Another said he punched a prisoner in the face because the prisoner irritated him. The sergeant said the soldiers laughed when she asked them about the consequences of the abuse. The Pentagon says it's investigating. Meanwhile, Britain is continuing to push for the closure of the Guantanamo prison. On Thursday, Foreign Secretary Margaret Beckett said the indefinite detention of Guantanamo prisoners is, quote, unacceptable and ineffective in terms of counterterrorism. At the United Nations, the Security Council appears close to agreeing on a response to North Korea's announced nuclear test. The Bush administration has reportedly dropped language threatening wide-ranging sanctions and the possibility of military force. A vote's expected Saturday. In the occupied territories, the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says the number of Palestinian children killed this year is nearly double the number for all 2005. 13-year-old Suhaib Qadia became the 92nd Palestinian child this year when she was shot Thursday during an Israeli attack on Gaza. Overall, Israel's killed more than 800 Palestinian children since the beginning of the Second Intifada 6 years ago. in Russia, the newspaper of slain Russian journalist Anna Politkovskaya has published an unfinished article she was writing at the time of her murder. She was killed on Saturday as she returned home to her apartment. She was one of Russia's leading journalists and human rights advocates. The unfinished article is a detailed account of brutal torture committed by the Russian-backed Chechen officials. Many believe Politkovskaya was killed because of her outspoken criticism of President Vladimir Putin, the Chechen War, and possibly the unfinished article itself. In Britain, a London resident has pleaded guilty to plotting terrorist attacks in Britain and the United States. 34-year-old Darren Barrot said he planned to use a radioactive dirty bomb in Britain. He also admitted to planning attacks on the Washington headquarters of the IMF and World Bank, the New York Stock Exchange, and the Prudential Buildings in Newark, New Jersey. Prosecutors say the plot never reached an advanced stage and that Barrot had no funding or bomb-making equipment. In France, lawmakers have passed a bill that criminalizes denial of the Armenian Holocaust. The bill was passed over the fierce lobbying of the Turkish government. Turkey continues to deny it killed some 1.5 million Armenians during the First World War. Here in New York, a 29-year-old gay man is clinging to life following an apparent hate crime that started on the internet. The victim, Michael Sandy, was chatting online with two men who convinced him to meet them for sex at a Brooklyn parking lot. Police say Sandy, an African-American, was met by four white males who robbed and beat him. The men chased Sandy onto a nearby street where he was hit by a passing car. The men beat him again as he lay on the road. Sandy has suffered extensive brain damage and is on life support. In Albany, New York, two Muslim immigrants have been convicted on terrorism charges in a case that raised major questions over the conduct of government officials. The men, Yassin Aref and Mohammed Hossein, were convicted of aiding a government informant in a fake plot to assassinate a Pakistani diplomat. The men's attorneys say their clients had no violent history and are the victims of government entrapment. Earlier this year, defense lawyers failed to have the case dismissed on the grounds it came out of the Bush administration's warrantless spy program. In Pennsylvania, the retail giant Walmart has lost a class action lawsuit that says it violated a series of state labor laws. On Thursday, a jury ruled Walmart illegally forced employees to work through rest breaks and during time not counted on the clock. Lawyers are seeking at least $62 million for close to 190,000 current and former employees. The jury is expected to decide on damages later today. Analysts say the case could have a major impact on several similar lawsuits against Walmart across the United States. And an update on a story we've been following, Iraq war resister Sergeant Ricky Clausen has been sentenced to 3 months of confinement for going absent without leave. Sergeant Clausen went AWOL after returning from Iraq in April 2005. You can go to our website at democracynow.org to see our interview with him just hours before he turned himself in to Fort Lewis 2 months ago. And finally, the Nobel Peace Prize was announced earlier today.
The Norwegian Nobel Committee has decided to award the Nobel Peace Prize for 2006, divided into two equal parts, to Muhammad Yunus and Grameen Bank for their efforts to create economic and social development from below. Lasting peace cannot be achieved unless large population groups find ways in which to break out of poverty. Microcredit is one such means.
Mohammed Yunus and the Grameen Bank's pioneering of microcredit loans to the poor beat out a list of close to 200 candidates, including the U.S. peace activist Cindy Sheehan and the Israeli nuclear whistleblower Mordechai Vanunu. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.